Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 29th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you were listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is in the Gospel of John. We're in chapter 4. We read 3 last week, so we're going to pick up chapter 4, being read by Alexander Scorby. John chapter 4.
Chapter 4. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the 6th hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away unto the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence, then, hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Jesus saith unto her, Go, call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had 5 husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that saidst thou truly. The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto Jesus, saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. And upon this came his disciples, and marveled that he talked with the woman. Yet no man said, What seekest thou, or why talkest thou with her? The woman then left her water pot, and went her way into the city, and saith to the men, Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? Then they went out of the city, and came unto him. In the meanwhile his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, Hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. Say not ye, There are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest? Behold, I say unto you, Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages, and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth, and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that whereon ye bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and ye are entered into their labors. And many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman which testified, He told me all that ever I did. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them. And he abode there 2 days. And many more believed because of his own word, and said unto the woman, Now we believe, not because of thy saying, for we have heard him ourselves, and know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Now after 2 days he departed thence and went into Galilee. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet hath no honor in his own country. Then when he was come into Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things that he did at Jerusalem at the feast, for they also went unto the feast. So Jesus came again into Cana of Galilee, where he made the water wine. And there was a certain nobleman, whose son was sick at Capernaum. When he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went unto him, and besought him that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Then said Jesus unto him, Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. The nobleman saith unto him, Sir, come down ere my child die. Jesus saith unto him, Go thy way, thy son liveth. And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And as he was now going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, Thy son liveth. Then inquired he of them the hour when he began to amend, and they said unto him, Yesterday, at the seventh hour, the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at the same hour in the which Jesus said unto him, Thy son liveth. And himself believed, and his whole house. This is again the second miracle that Jesus did when he was come out of Judea into Galilee.
Okay. Jan, do we have any announcements or questions?
Yes, we have one announcement here, and that's about the Red Pill Expo. This year it's occurring at Mount Rushmore, Rapid City area in South Dakota. It's June 5th and 6th, and they've got another great list of speakers for this year. If you'd like information on it, you can just go to redpillexpro.org, and it's all there. We'd like to get a head count on anybody that's going, plans to go. So if you're on that list, please email me so I can keep tabs on people. We're trying to get enough people together so that we can get a table, and we'd like to put a couple, three NLA people there. If you've never been to this area, it's a great area to visit. That time of year, the weather should be terrific. You can go to Mount Rushmore. You can go to Crazy Horse if you come up from the south. You can go through the Badlands on the east side of Rapid City. So there's a lot of things to do in addition to just going to the expo. So I highly recommend, if you're at all close, that you attend. I've got a 1,500-mile drive, so I'm going to have to forego it this year. But if you're close, I would recommend you at least check it out, and if you can't make it, you can sign up to listen to all recordings of the sessions. I think there were 23 speakers last time, and I think the numbers are similar this year as well. So that's the only announcement that I have, John.
Okay, you mentioned you're, what, 1,500 miles?
Right.
Okay, so I'm
about
probably
1,550. It's a pretty good run.
Yeah, so I'm probably about at least 1,600.
Yep, you're probably a little more than that.
Yeah, I'm thinking of going myself, so we'll see what happens. I'm going to try to make a decision in the next week or so. So before we get going on questions, do you have any questions?
We have about five questions.
Okay, well, we get going on that, you have one what?
Say again?
No, you were going to say something else. I'm sorry.
No. That was the only announcement that I have, John, on the Red Pill Expo.
All right. I talked with my publisher last week, on Friday, I believe it was, and I had received a copy of the formatted book for corrections. So I went through everything. I got it done. I think I received it on Thursday or something. I don't remember when. But in any event, I got it done before the weekend was out, and I sent in all of the formatted corrections. My conversation with them was that once I make the approval, I sign off on the approval of the editing, approval on the formatting, and approval on the book cover, then they'll be able to move it into print. And they say it should be less than 3 weeks, or about 3 weeks. I asked them to press it, as fast as they could. They claim they would, so we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll be less than 3 weeks, but I figure this week, I haven't received the cover on it yet for being able to sign off the approval, and they have to make all of the corrections on the formatted part of the book, that part of the process. So, like I said, I just sent it in today, this morning, and I'm kind of hoping to get all this completed by the end of the week. So if I can get everything signed off, if they can get that back to me, the formatted, part of the book that we made corrections on, and as soon as I receive the book cover itself, then I'll sign off on going forward, and it'll go into the process for printing. So I'm figuring if we take a week to the end of this week for them to get back to me and me to get back to them on the approval, once they get back to me, I mean, it's going to be real quick. I just got to go look at the pages I made corrections on, make sure it was done correctly, and I'll sign off. Book cover may be in the mail tomorrow for me. It looks like they mailed it out already, so I'll see that, and I'll sign off in the next day or two on that. And like I said, at that point, then we go to print. So I'll keep everyone informed. Maybe hopefully we'll have more exact news next week as far as it's in print or it's in the process of going into print and how many weeks it's going to take. So we probably will have it, the books coming and going out, I'd say the end of this month or the very beginning of next month, as long as everything goes well this week. So hopefully that'll go well, and we'll get these books out and delivered. Anybody who wants a book, come to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org. You can see here on the browser that I'm sharing, on the right-hand side, click on Government by Consent, and it'll open up a page for information on the book. You can read a copy of the preface. So click here to read the book's preface. And it's quite long, it's 15 pages, but it does give a really good synopsis of the book, of what's going on, and also you can read through the chapters. Now, I haven't updated the chapters, maybe I'll try to do that tomorrow, but I'll get it done shortly. Chapter 11 was changed, and I added a chapter 12, so there's two chapters in here I'll put down all of the information as far as the chapter and the breakdown of the chapter. And so anybody who wants to order the book, there's a couple of places where you can click here to print the order form. You can click down here, or even up on the top of the page, I believe I put a link also. Click here that's to read the book's preface. Here it is, click here to print the order form. So if you click on that, print out this order form and send it out, and you'll be put on a list for receiving a book. Now, I did finally get a price on the book. They gave me a price last week. And the book is going to retail for $44. So I'm estimating shipping and handling to be about $6 a book. It'll probably be a little more, so I just ran it off at $50 a book. We had been selling it for $50 a book for quite some time, and we dropped it down to $48 about a month ago. And so my guesses were pretty good on what I thought the price of the book would be. So $50 a book, which includes shipping and handling. And like I said, it'll probably cost me a little more, maybe a buck more or something. I don't know, because I haven't worked all that out. Now, we're asking people to buy books for their sheriffs. So we have a campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Let me go back to the order form. We need to prime our sheriffs before they get, you know, we meet our sheriffs as far as the grassroots working to build committees of safety and do all the necessary work that we the people need to do in order to have government by consent through that committee of safety, which includes rebuilding and restructuring throughout the whole United States, the militia, both the formal and the informal militia. And we're also, of course, taking back the political process by working with getting people to work with us to become committeemen in every county. And people in their state need to work together county to county. And that has to, of course, repeat itself through all 50 states. We also, the committees of safety, be responsible for helping us to find and encouraging people to become those committeemen and for everyone to sign up to get on the list as a militia. Everyone can join the militia. Everyone can assist in one way or another doing emergencies. So we all need to be doing that. Also building administrators for the grand and petit juries. We need four people in every county to do that, and four administrators and one paralegal secretary. So that paralegal secretary will also be an administrator and be able to fill in, you know, if one goes on vacation or is ill or sick or whatever, or they just need the extra help. But we do need a paralegal secretary to maintain all the necessary records, and maybe we'll have to hire an additional person in each county for dealing with additional secretarial work if there is that much involved. But someone needs to be able to write the necessary papers, particularly for the grand jury. When the grand jury makes a decision on indictment or not, they need to be able to have that written up, and someone needs to understand the process and the law to some degree, not necessarily the law, but the process and the procedures. And to some degree, the proper language, which is really common law. But nevertheless, we do need someone that is going to take care of that, and we should have someone with an experience on how the court system works. Some of the court system, of course, and the things that they run, the way they run things in the courts, are unlawful, unconstitutional. There needs to be some correction on that, and we'll be working and discussing that as we go forward. We also, just a little quick, and we're writing right now the handbook. Let me open the page to the handbooks. You can go under People's Duty and come down and click on handbooks. Okay, and this is the handbooks that we've done already. We spoke a little bit about this last week. But we have the Committee of Safety handbook. We have the Jurist handbook. We have, the Sheriff's handbook. And we will have an administrator's handbook, which we're working on that. And we're going to have a committeeman's handbook. And the committeeman's handbook will be very specific and detailed on process, procedure, how things work, what our powers and authorities are, which is pretty much unlimited. One of the things, you know, I sort of had an epiphany on this just recently because, you know, running for committeeman, for instance, if we wanted to run this year in order to come into power and authority next year, which would be 2022, most states, if not all, have already gone or are going through the process. But that shouldn't really be a problem for us because the people who are acting as committeemen today are no committeemen at all. They don't have the power. They don't have the authority. And the courts have said that many times, at least here in New York they have, the New York Supreme Court. So they have made it clear that, their power and authority comes from the party rules. And the courts don't get involved much more than that. And they are operating as people who are unelected. Now, there may be some states, we haven't found any yet, but there may be some states that do have elected committeemen. We're doing research on the laws right now and looking at the process for each state. That's going to take a little time, but we're gathering together at least the latest political calendars, which will give us a lot of information. and it'll make reference to whatever law is available in the particular states. But everything should generally be the same as it is here in New York. Ultimately, if 5% of the individuals within your election district in the party you're running in is the required number of signatures to get on what's called the designating petition. And that designating petition is what gets you on to the ballot. It requires 5%. So if, let's say, there's 200 families or 200 people that registered as a Republican. So you would need 10 signatures on your designating petition, and then you would be available to be able to go onto the ballot to be elected as committee man. If no one is running against you for that seat within that election district, then you are deemed elected. New York State Constitution makes that clear, and we'll be checking other constitutions. And by the way, we do have a page, I'll look for it in a minute, where we have all, you know, the constitutions for each of the states. And so if anybody, everybody should go take a look at that page, and if your state's not there, maybe you can find it. We only have a few states, and we need to get a lot more states. So please, anybody that, if your state isn't there, do some research, go to your state's webpage, and get some information on it and find your constitution. You also should be able to just really Google it and find your constitution. But the we need copies your constitutions in a PDF. Now, we did have some people working on it a while ago, and they found places where there's copies, but it's online. And we want to get a hard copy, so we need something on PDF and people can download it and have it, but also there's a reference to. Once we get all of those state constitutions, then we can pretty much look through it and see what they might say about the election of a committee man, if anything. Now, it doesn't matter whether they have information on it or not. The office exists, and it exists in every election district across America. And so if there's really no detailed information on it, then it's still the office is available, and it's a matter of just running your designating petition and filing it appropriately in the right time and getting elected as a committee man. So 5% would be the I think we're going to find pretty consistent on that 5% of the signatures within your election district for the party you're running in. Now, we are trying to run on both the Republican and the Democratic side. So we want to really, because we're going to try to take over the Republican Party by becoming elected. I mean, remember, the Republican Party is a corporation. It has nothing to do with the law. And they have no power, no authority to be doing what they're doing. But since no one's doing it, and they're the ones that decide who gets onto the ballot. And because they're controlled by the powers that be, then whoever is in, the powers that be, whoever is brought on by them is put onto the ballot. Every once in a while, a good person gets in. But again, that's pretty rare, as we've been noticing as we've been watching the news over the past years and seeing how terrible things are. But here's the key thing. They are operating without being elected. We can operate without being elected as we're preparing to become elected. And we're going to get into more detail on this. I might even maybe just spend maybe some time next week to get in basically to the real details of what we can do as an unelected committee man. Because look at the committee men bring people to get them into office. And in order for them to get into office, they have to have designating petitions. And if they're running for office, they may need 1,500 signatures, or they may need, more than that. Again, if you're running for a governor, it's quite a bit more than that. And all of that information on how many signatures you need, or what percentage of signatures of the people within your election district, within that political subdivision, governor or assemblyman or senate or whatever, then you're going to need X amount of signatures. Now, when you get a lot of people together, you know, if you got 62 counties like we do have here in New York, let's say, and you have committeemen in each one of those counties, you know, and they're building up because through the committees of safety, we're hoping more to get plenty of people to run for committeeman within the counties. But let's say we have 20 people or so in the counties. And even if you don't want to run for committeeman, maybe you can work with the committee of safety as the potential committeeman in order to walk and get the necessary signatures for the people we want to put onto the ballot. So we know that Trump's going to be very active in the 2022 election, and we can be available and there to walk whether we're elected or not. We can do this, and because they're doing it, and there is no law against doing it. So just no law for them having any authority to do this. And by the way, once we become the authority, they have to cease and desist as the name of Democratic or Republican. You know, as far as a party is concerned, because the true parties that work for the people are to be elected. Now, the way it used to be in the beginning, and it needs to go back to, is to get rid of the party process altogether. We need to destroy the Republican Party from within, to eliminate it, get rid of it. We need to do the same thing in the Democratic Party. We don't, even if it's mostly Republicans and just a few Democrats here or there, it doesn't matter. As long as they're elected, we can fuse together. And we should work together, and we will work together as under the name of committeemen, without a party name. We won't use Republican, we won't use Democrat, but we'll just use committeemen. When we run for election, we'll have to use Republican or Democrat. Once we get in, we can get rid of the parties and fuse them back together and become just committeemen, which is the way it should be. We're not interested in party positions, party squabbling, party, you know, debates and decisions on trying to make changes or something. No, we're interested in just getting statesmen into office and then to hold their feet to the fire to make sure they obey the Constitution. Our position and thinking and in any of our discussions as committeemen will always be the Constitution. We don't want these people talking, the people becoming that we're going to get elected. We don't want them talking and debating anything about our First Amendment or our Second Amendment. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. Let's apply it. There should be no restrictions, no requirements. You cannot license a right. And that's clear, too, by the way. Not only is it logical that you cannot license or make permits for a right, but even the United States Supreme Court has made that point numerous times. So we need to really start organizing, and we can start taking power right away. We can start exercising power right away. We can become a block. Once we hit critical mass, then we will have total control. And reaching critical mass is going to require those people to get involved in committees of safety within our counties. And we need hundreds of people in every county involved. And we need to do that, get hundreds of people involved within the first year in every single county. Or at least our target will be to get most of the counties done, but I think we can get them all done once critical mass moves forward. I do believe critical mass is going to become very quickly, very soon. With the book being released within the month, and we get them out to the sheriffs, that's going to be a big deal. And we will be prepping the sheriffs so that they will have some understanding of who and what we are and what we're doing when they get the book and start reading it, and then we approach them. We do have a plan on how to approach the sheriff. It'll take 2 or 3 months of organizing your county before you approach the sheriff. Certain goals have to be achieved, and then you approach the sheriff, and we have a process. You know, on this page here where the handbooks are, by the way, you know, for instance, some of the things that need to be completed and done is the Committee of Safety resolution. You have to form the Committee of Safety in a very specific way. And so we have the Committee of Safety charter. You have to have a charter which explains exactly who you are, what you're doing, and what your powers, authorities, and what you plan on doing. And you need to have that done before you see the sheriff. You also have to have your resolutions done before you see the sheriff. Everyone has to take a vow. Okay, and it's a vow to God. It's a private, personal vow to God. that you're going to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and uphold the Constitution. Let's see, we have the militia codes and rules and regulations. Subcommittee needs to be created for that within the Committee of Safety, and that subcommittee be responsible for organizing and getting people involved to become militiamen. We have, of course, the sheriff's handbook, which would be delivered to the sheriff at the same time. But again, they'll have the book, but we're still going to give them the sheriff's handbook anyway. Once we get enough donations on this, we'll start printing out the handbooks in pocket handbooks so people can have them and stick them in their top shirt pocket or their pocketbook or something or whatever, back pocket even, whatever. But, that costs money, and we'll start thinking about trying to raise money for that soon. I do want to get all of these books eventually up in handbooks, but we will always have, all these handbooks will always be in PDF form and downloadable on our website on this page. But the committee, again, getting back to the handbook that we're going to be putting together, and I'm in the process of doing that, but we want to put that handbook together, and again, that's going to lay out the very specific details on what we just spoke about now. We'll lay it out in a little more detail, and of course, how the committee man process works, and a lot of information concerning what people need to know concerning the committee man. So, time to organize, and with the book coming out, that I think could be helpful. We're looking to get interviews. We have a person running on that right now that's going to be getting interviews for us so that we get our word out and get into our word out to large organizations. We are working with other organizations right now. As most of you already know, we're working with a group of sheriffs who are organizing the state that they're in, which is Michigan, and they will be pressing forward through the whole nation trying to pull all sheriffs together and push them to learn and the Constitution ultimately, because most of them don't know it, and they'll be supporting our book to press that forward, and again we'll be pushing that book out to them. So that we're working on, and it's happening. But we're also working with other groups. Right now we're working with the Republic Review, and we're working with that group of people, and we're also working with We the People, with Robert Schultz, and he's done a lot of great work, but again, he's working with us, and there are other groups that will be coming on board hopefully soon, and bringing our forces together. After all, we are National Liberty Alliance. That name means, of course, we're looking for a national alliance for people who believe and want to support and uphold liberty, which is our common law process that we have. Liberty is an unalienable right. It's a natural right and cannot be touched. People through this information will be sharing, not only on the grassroots level, the books, booklets, the handbooks, and different materials, and our courses, and the book Government by Consent. Once people read through those things and come to a real understanding of what liberty really is, and what a natural law republic should be looking at, like, then we can start to apply laws that are already on the books. We don't have to go make these laws, push for the legislators to make the laws. The laws are already there to remove from office anybody and prosecute them and jail them for any elected or appointed individual that uses their position in order to destroy our Constitution, in order to try to water down our Second Amendment right or our First Amendment right. There are laws, everything they're doing right now, they can be prosecuted. We can indict them and prosecute them right now. Of course, because the court is corrupt, we can't do that. But we're going to do that once we get to the other side. But we're going to serve notice on every elected individual.
Hey, Cortana, control panel.
Excuse me? We're going to press this idea and this action forward once we get on the other side on every single elected individual in the entire United States. Anybody using their platform, using their position to springboard a war against our Constitution, war against our unalienable rights, needs to be removed from office and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And like I said, it's already there. All we need is a court of justice. And I do believe when we get on the other side, we will have that court of justice. So it's a matter. But meanwhile, this is a time for preparing, time for educating ourselves, to really understand everything that National Liberty Alliance is doing. The best thing to do is to read our handbooks. And anybody who is, any part of the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, that's a requirement to read our handbooks. And, of course, we should start with the Committee of Safety handbook. That should be really the first one, because people need to be have an idea and an understanding on how that structure is put together and what exactly the whole plan is built around that Committee of Safety. And then, of course, the different subcommittees necessary to work with sheriffs, the subcommittee necessary to work with the National Liberty Alliance, the Committee of Correspondence, which communicates and works with the counties next door to you and the counties across your state and even the counties across America. And, of course, working with National Liberty Alliance, communicating, educating, and informing, different things we need to do. But we need to come out at some point in one accord on certain issues that we'll list out. I'm sure a lot of people will come up with a lot of issues that are national problems. For instance, Agenda 21, got to take a hike, got to get rid of it. And we need to work together on that in every single county. So the fastest that we can organize, the faster we can start exercising our powers and authority. We do have members in every single state of the union. I have a guesstimate that we probably have members in at least two-thirds of the counties across America, at least, probably more, but at least two-thirds. And if we just work with two-thirds, we can accomplish our goal. So we have to stimulate the people that are in those counties. We have to work together, those of us who are active, to get people within our counties active. That's in our membership. Our membership is close to 10,000 at this point. A lot of people are not active, but they're in there. They're still registered. They're getting our email. But it's time to really push them forward. We're really going to be able to really work with those people once you start building your committees of safety. Once you get a committee of safety started, one or two people come together, two or three people come together, and just initiate and start it, make a plan. And plan for a meeting, your first meeting. And the things I mentioned a short while ago, the charter, the resolutions, and so on, those things need to be done. It's going to take 3 months, 2 to 3 months to do that. Because your first meeting is preparing, getting as many people as you can to that meeting, and then making a plan, create your subcommittees, work on your resolution. The following meeting, you'll make a vote on your resolutions, your charters, and you'll start to package it together, get your seals, get your letterhead together, and prepare for creating a nice book form of who you are and what you're doing, and also add into that the sheriff's handbook. And then that's when you go to meet your sheriff for the first time, hand them all the paperwork, let them know that the next meeting's coming up and you'd like them to be there. And then you've made your connection. So it's going to take at least 2, probably 3 months to achieve that goal. Meanwhile, we need to be building up membership in all of those counties. And when you go out, we've got lots of ideas in the Committee of Safety. We give you a list of different kinds of groups that are out there that is pretty much in every county across America. These people should be really interested in our message and what we're doing. We'll create some flyers or some information that people can kind of work off of, bullet points or something, to share with people to interest them to come to your first meeting. And, of course, every meeting after, you want more and more people. One of the best things to do is probably look to bring this message to your gun clubs, your local gun clubs. These people would be very interested in what's going on. They know that their rights are being abused and they're in jeopardy, particularly the Second Amendment. And they need to understand who the enemy is, because some of these associations, these gun associations that are national, they've been taken over. So, and we could discuss that if people have questions on that. We can look a little into that. But right now, just that statement, I'll let it sit as it is. But we as a people need to also work together. You know, probably you should have a state meeting at least once a year, once we're organized. It should be done maybe, centrally located to the other people within the states that have to travel. And it should be done probably maybe at a place that has a really nice property, a gun club that has a nice property where you can do some target shooting. And you can make a day event out of it, make it a family affair. And but then, you know, have some speakers, get some target practice, get the militia up and going in this whole system. That probably should be done once a year. Every state should probably run something like that. Maybe in your counties you might want to do that, of course, however often you want to do it, once every 6 months, you know, whatever you want to do. People have to figure out what they want to do. But we do need to organize and get together, and that's a perfect way to organize the militia, particularly because everybody is in the militia. Everybody is part of the militia. Even handicapped people, they can do something. We can all do something. And you don't have to have, necessarily a weapon and be able to fight or anything of that nature. But, of course, we need training. But everybody can do something. So we have to organize. The time has come. This is a time for organizing, communicating with each other, educating ourselves, and preparing. And by the end of this year, I should hope that we will be able to take back America, no matter what happens between now and then. As long as we can organize and get the people together all on the same focus and start working together to get rid of all these terrorists that are in our elected positions, both on the federal and state levels, and start putting these people in jail and ousting them out and putting in statesmen and acting like the people that we should be so that we can have government by consent, we need to take back the power. And we can do it. But it involves everybody. We all must do that. Okay, that's all I have to say for today. Let's go to some questions. And then is Brent here yet, by the way? And is Gerard here?
He was here earlier, anyway.
Okay, well, Brent, if you're here, pipe in. Gerard, if you're here, pipe in. Meanwhile, Jen, what kind of questions do we have?
Okay, I hope Gerard is still focused on us. The first question is one he was came up last week, and he was going to see if he could find the answer to. The question was, a few weeks ago on the Monday night call, Gerard mentioned to a caller...
Well, let's find out if Gerard's here first. Gerard, are you here?
He was here. He was here a while ago.
Okay, because I want to make sure he's hearing this. Is he near the computer? Gerard, you there? If he doesn't answer right now, we'll go to the other questions and we'll try to call him again.
Okay, maybe Terry can ding on him and get him on.
Okay. Yeah, see if you can find Gerard. All right, let's take the other questions meanwhile.
Okay. In 2017, my home was taken from me on a non-judicial foreclosure. In 2019, I disputed it on my credit report. I checked all three credit agencies on Saturday, and my mortgage has been completely deleted from my records and hasn't even been 7 years. How is this possible, and or how can they do this? In my mind, it's because they don't want the fraud they committed to be noticed. How should I go about this situation?
Well, my suggestion is do a joinder with us concerning the non-judicial foreclosure. You had no due process. Just file your papers with us. And when we get to the other side, we are going to push for people to receive their homes back or at least some kind of restitution. There may be some cases where you just aren't going to be able to get your original home back, but we need to get at least restitution to that. So, but in most cases, I think we need to go and get the people's original homes back. And this is true with anybody who joins us with any case. You know, we will push that into the courts. It'll be up to you to fight the court case. With the certain cases, you wouldn't have to really fight because it's a no-brainer. Non-judicial foreclosures are unlawful, number one. And even if, so that's the bottom line. And why are they unlawful? And why are they doing it? They're doing it because they can't win a case against you to foreclose on your mortgage in a court of law. Cannot happen. Because, first of all, the banks do not own your home. The banks have no skin in the game. They did not loan you money. They went to the Fed window to get the money. And so it didn't come from the bank. The bank really was just the agent that put the loan together, and they get a point or two or whatever it is, or maybe a point and a half. I guess it's different to every bank, whatever it is. And it doesn't even have to be a bank. You know, it could be some other kind of an agent. But nevertheless, it runs through banks, and then it goes to the Fed window. They sign it out. Now, the Fed window can't chase you. There is no contract, really. They can't prove anything, and the whole thing is a fraud anyway. So I believe on the other side, we're going to move into a jubilee period with things like this, for homes. And I believe that once we establish that, you won't have to pay mortgages no more. Your homes will be yours. And we will be able to get back your homes, or at least get restitution for those who've lost it. So those kind of cases are very, very easy, because it's cut and dry. So any non-judicial foreclosure, whether it's a foreclosure on tax or foreclosure on a mortgage, they were unlawful, you didn't get due process, and they need to deal with that. And we need to go after these people, the ones that have been informed anyway, because if you're in the process of going through this, we will inform the judge and the court that they're going through that non-judicial foreclosure for. And we will hold them liable at the other end, probably through an indictment. But even though they go through courts, there is no official paperwork on this because it's a non-judicial foreclosure. No judge signs off on it. Maybe there may be some cases where they do. They're not too bright, But they're given the name of who they are and the agreement with the crime that they're committing. So, but anyway, that's my suggestion. Now, as far as not being registered or, as far as a mortgage or whatever, first of all, I don't think that that's too bad for you. Probably it helps you, I guess, on your credit report. But we don't get involved in that. But I will tell you that credit reporting is unlawful also. Because they can't go about collecting information on you and sharing it with other people. And there are services that will clean up your credit report. They really write letters and give them the ultimatum, the cease and desist, ultimately. I'm going to look into that, and maybe we'll try to get a service going here at National Liberty Alliance or train some people. Maybe we can train someone in every state to how to do, look into these things. We'll see if we can do with that. But we are in desperate need for people to volunteer their time to help us build your states up and also maybe things like this. We are looking for state coordinators who will make it their duty to make sure they approach and get people in every single county in their states. We will give them access to the membership here at National Liberty Alliance within your state. And we'll do the same thing for anybody who gets a committee of safety going. We'll give you access to all of the people within your state, and you can find the people in your counties and call them up and invite them to your first meeting and so on. But I think gun clubs and rotary clubs and a lot of other things, liberty groups, you still have a lot of liberty groups all over the United States. Those are the people you want to chase to get to your first meetings. So anyway, that's how we can help, and really you need to help yourself. We're just going to, assist you a bit, but you'll be doing your own work as far as getting your home back, and we will assist you and help you concerning the law and the requirement, and any judge, and when we get to the other side, any judge who refuses to obey the law, we will indict them. We'll first warn them. We'll give them a warning, a very clear warning, and then we will pursue indictments. I can't say we will indictment them, of course, because we have to bring it before the grand jury and they have to indict. Soon, once we get to those points, though, on the other side, we'll be developing the grand juries, we'll be developing themselves within the states. And it wouldn't be the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. but it will be the county grand juries administrators, shall I say, that'll build, and call together a grand jury for the purpose of indicting. And again, we're teaching people how to do all these things, and people need to get involved, need to get educated, and work with us so that you can become free and independent within your counties and in your towns and your villages or your cities, and also free and independent from our federal government. And to some degree, of course, free and independent from National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance is a facilitator and will assist everyone in every way we can, teaching, educating, communicating, tying people together, and laying out the plan so that people can exercise their powers and authorities on the grassroots level, and we'll work together as often as we can on major problems like Agenda 21, and there's a heck of a lot more. But we need to work together really hard as soon as possible to start indicting all of these people in power that think that they can use their office to destroy our nation by destroying our Constitution, by trying to seize and take away our unalienable rights. We have to stop them from doing this. And so that's our primary focus once we get onto the other side. But that requires everyone involved. Just think about it. It was 440, I think, people in Congress, and you have 100 senators, and that's on the federal level alone. Every state, you got a Senate, and you got assembly persons in every state, which is the legislators. And I know here in New York we have 150 assemblymen, and we have 62 senators. Those are state senators and state assemblymen. And they operate the same way as on the federal level, but of course for state business. So people need to investigate these people and see who the enemy is, and work together, and we'll assist you with, growing up a grand jury within your state. Collectively, even if we don't have many counties involved at the time, but they're working on it, collectively we can work together anyway. We just need people within the states to find out who the bad people are, and get them indicted. First, we will, of course, notify them of our intentions and let them know, lay out their sins, so to speak, and let them know how they can find grace back under we the people. Or if they don't deal with their problems, they're out of there. Again, we've got to start off with a sense of mercy. There are certain people that maybe you don't even want to think about it. We'll just let them know what we're going to do. Maybe they're that evil. I don't know. You people have to work that out and figure out who those people are within your states. And then you have to run through the process to get those indictments. But we will work with you on that process. And we will also work with you to inform, assist, and educate those processes. And also to help you get the process to actually move forward. And so we need to work together on that. Okay. Any other questions here?
I see Gerard is back. Can we get him unmuted?
Yep. Gerard?
Yeah.
There he is.
Okay.
Hey, wait a minute. Just a second. I want to add to something John was saying. Okay. You talk about credit ratings and all this. Well, the newest thing is they want to implement the same system that China had with the cell phones, where they track you and they give you social credits, and based on what you're buying, selling, who you're talking to, how you're talking, you gain or lose credits. New York State has just instituted the Excelsior Pass, which is going to be something that you can prove that you were vaccinated with. It's going to be a QRC code on your phone, and I don't know what other ways. The trouble is that it's very easy to load all the rest of your information and cross-check and throw your credit rating and everything in there. They'll know everything about you, besides the fact that they got this horrible vaccine that's going to kill everybody in 2 years that they're not telling us about. But nevertheless, they make it sound like it's voluntary and it's this and it's that. It's not going to stay voluntary. And what's going to happen is they're going to track you and trace you. They're going to know everything you buy, because anytime you use like PayPal or anything like that, they all get noticed. Bing, 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 bing. They're going to know exactly how much money you spend, and eventually they're going to tell you how much you can spend and where you can spend it. I mean, thank God this thing maybe is going to be over, and when the switch comes, I hope that it kills all that, because otherwise we're going to be on universal basic income. That's where they want us. They want us like China, where everything's done on the cell phone and with social credits, and I would not use that Excelsior Pass. I mean, right now, oh, it's free, you can do this, you can do that, make it sound so good. It's a trap. I'm just warning everybody, it's a trap. Anyway, go ahead.
And I'd like to say something there, too. Remember, though, Trump has said the best is yet to come, and there's no way he would permit or allow this, and I do think we're going to, that fix is going to take care of itself as time goes on. But nevertheless, whatever happens, it's really up to the people to deal with this. We can stop that problem by building our committees of safety, taking power and authority, and make sure that we get government by our consent. We want these people to obey the Constitution. We ordained and established that for them. When they break that rule, they break that law, they'll get their warning, and after that, they'll get their jail sentence, hopefully, because we're going to go indict them. And again, it's up to the people to do that, to go and get themselves an indictment, and then we'll get enforcement. And remember, at that point in time, as long as we are doing our job now and preparing and organizing, we will have our sheriffs on board. They will understand what's going on. They will understand what is required of them, and then we will have enforcement, and we will do it. And we will do this. We will indict or consider an indictment for any judge who tries to interfere and destroy the opportunity of the people to take back their authority and to stop this craziness of control of the people. They can make no law to control our behavior. No law. They can't put no roadblock in between us and our necessity and ability to be able to go out and make purchases and do it privately. And it's our business. It's not theirs. We don't want to be tracked by anyone. We need to get rid of this whole thing. And we can do it as a people. We just have to organize it. But I do believe that Trump will be working on this kind of a problem. And I do trust and believe in Trump. He has kept every promise and more that he made before when he ran for office. He's kept every promise. And even a lot more than he didn't even promise. So I do believe that the best is yet to come. And it's not far away. And there's a lot we can talk about on that. And I know Gerard's probably more in depth on the details of what's going on with that. And maybe he'll talk about that when he takes the mic over. But we need to take America back. Okay, there's a question for you coming up, Gerard.
One comment on what you just said, John. Trump is following the why interfere with your enemy while he's in the process of destroying himself. So he has to let him do it before they have fully documented how bad they are and what they're doing. And
absolutely.
So that means we've got to suffer through it for a while before things get straightened out, probably. Anyway, next question is for Gerard. Remember, it came up last week. I'll read it for you quickly. A few weeks ago on the Monday night call, Gerard mentioned to a caller a resource that focused on traffic violations, and he really spoke highly of it, stating that the information had a 94% or so success rate in prevailing in court if the information was followed correctly by the defendants. I believe it was called Lewis Law. If possible, could he or someone at NLA please specify or list the website or contact information in regards to that?
Yeah, and I don't have it tonight. Hang on. Let me see if I can get on there in the course of what we're doing and find that site. And it was, I believe it was Lewis Law. There was two guys, and one of them was a retired Virginia State Police, I remember. And he was the better one of the two sites. He was really good. And the reason I liked him is because he understood the constitutionality of all this. The other guy was like, you know, he played the statutes and all that. But the fellow from West Virginia, the trooper, he was very up on the Constitution, and that's what he based his stuff on. And it was kind of right along the lines of what National Liberty Alliance is. So I'll get that. I'll try to get that before the end of the show. I've been crazy trying to get everything working here, so I didn't get a chance to really get on there and see. But I'll probably be able to pull it up. Maybe it's in my history.
All right, let's take a few questions, and then we can come back to this question at the end again after I finish.
All right.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Dan, next question.
Next question. I live in Pennsylvania and have received mail from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation regarding Real ID, a federally managed and archived means of identification. This publication states that beginning October 1st, 2021, the Department of Homeland Security will require a Real ID compliant driver's license containing a gold star to board a domestic flight or enter a federal building. My primary concern with this is that in the event we are either plaintiffs or defendants in a federal case and cannot access these facilities, what recourse do we have? Is this a potential violation of due process?
Well, you bet. It's a violation of our right of access to our courts of justice. And remember, our courts of justice are not to be run by someone with a little hammer and a cape on sitting high up on some desk somewhere. You know, we are not to be judged by another man. That is not part of common law. So you can't take a political animal, someone who's appointed or someone who is elected, so that they might judge over you. That's not possible under common law. And our system is clearly, we're under common law, but they ignore that. The bottom line is we can only be judged by our peers, and that's a jury of 12 people. So there is no place that they can really judge us. But as far as getting into the building, yeah, they did the same thing here in New York, and I don't have their special license or something. I just have my regular license. I have no intentions on getting one. And if I got to go to federal court, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to keep you out? Well, look, by the time we get to all that, we'll be on the other side. We're definitely, they're not going to be able to move that quick and get it done. It's going to take them a year or more to really get each state or any state really, even New York hasn't finished on that. So, and I ran into this, goodness, I think it was 3-4 months ago. But I think by the time we get to the other side, that's irrelevant. You can't keep someone out of their courts. We own the courts. You know, and there is to be no judge in a court of law, only a magistrate. Now, it is true that all judges are magistrates, so they can wear a magistrate hat, because they're there to certify the process and the decision of the grand jury and sign off and push it forward for execution by the sheriff or whatever has to be done. So, but anyway, I wouldn't worry much about it, and it's interesting. It's just another thing, another plan for them to have more power and control and knowledge and track us and all that other stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if in those special licenses, and probably any license, they may even have chips in it that maybe they can find you or something. I don't know. GPS. Anyway, next question.
Okay, John always talks about wanting to get on radio shows, interviews, to get NLA's existence and message out there. One show is the Patriot Street Fighter / Tipping Point radio show with Scott McKay. I don't know if anyone from NLA has heard of him. NLA came to mind immediately when I was listening to a show and heard him bring up the Organic Act of 1871, corporatizing our nation's capital. I know that John mentions this treasonous act often and cites its destructive evidence that we have and still live under. Another show to consider getting on, and I know John knows about this, is the X-22 Report Spotlight. I can provide links to these below.
Yeah, the problem we're having with some of these places is trying to discover a way to have communications with these people. So, but we do have someone working on that, and let me think of it a minute here. Francine, maybe we should put an email together that would go over to Crystal for anybody who has information or, and can assist her on a particular contact where we can get an interview, and then Crystal can then work on that. So, what do you think? Or should we just give? Did we get Crystal a email yet? And if we did, do we want to use hers for that?
Yes, she has an email. Carl set it up.
So maybe we should just have someone send their information right to her, Crystal, at National Liberty Alliance.org.
Yes. She's still right. Encouraging John.
I'm sorry, you seem distant. Can you get a little closer?
Make sure you spell it correctly.
I was going to ask you to spell it.
It's Crystal, Christ, with A-L at the end.
Oh, yeah, I think you mentioned that before.
I did.
Yes. Anyway, Crystal, C-H-R-I-S-T-A-L, that's pretty easy to remember, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please send any contact information you have or anybody that, whatever information you can get for us to Crystal on that, and she will endeavor to work out interview with us here at National Liberty Alliance. We need to get the word out. This is the best way to get it out, is these interviews, so we need that out. And when the book comes out, hopefully to get a lot of interviews just for the book itself, too. But next question.
Also, is the NLA familiar with Nasara Gassara, the National Global Economic Securities and Reformation Act? These terms have been circulating around a little more these days.
You know, that sounds very familiar, but I don't have knowledge of it. Gerard, do you have knowledge of this?
Yeah, I do, absolutely. And that's what Charlie Ward's been, that we were going to apply for the money. Nasara is a national, and Gassara is the global. And there's another one that the cabal wants.
Are they the one that's given funding?
Yes, there's money available that's going to come back into the system. They've been seizing all this money with Trump's executive order,
And we don't have contact information on that yet?
Not yet.
Anybody that has contact information on this, please get a hold of us. Best thing to do is get that kind of information, send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. I believe you get copies from the mail also, don't you, Gerard?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, usually most of the leadership gets a copy of that, so it goes to numerous people, and someone will pick up on that. But, yeah, we are seeking funding. There are people out there that are giving large funding, and I'm hearing, and I don't know, how true this is, but I'm hearing multi-millions, even a billion. We have a program that we could use $1 billion for. If we can get $1 billion or even quite a few millions of dollars or even $1 million, we can do huge, huge things. And we do intend on the people on the leadership here at National Liberty Alliance that will eventually become full-time paid positions. For those who don't know, the administrators for the grand jury, that's a paid position within your county right down in the courthouse. If anybody interested in that position, just sign up on it. You can go to your
My account?
Yeah, the account. That's what they called it, my account. Yeah, if you click on my account, there is a box you can check, and to become a committee, an administrator for the grand jury in your county. And by the way, you don't have to live in the county that you're working in. So, if the county, if the courthouse is closer in the county next door to you than the one in your county, and you want to work, it doesn't matter. You can work there. Or, we need 5 people in these positions, four people as regular administrators, and one, as I mentioned earlier, who is a paralegal / secretary, who will also be an administrator for the grand jury and the trial jury also. People need to sign up for this, sign for the position, and if all the positions are taken in your county, again, you can work in the county next door. Or maybe other people might be more interested in working the county next door, like I said, because it's closer to it. So, whatever the case may be. But those are paid positions. They're professional positions. They'll pay well, and we'll have great benefits. We'll be looking for a lot of people. It's looking for employment. But until we get there, we're looking for a lot of people to volunteer their time and get educated, to work the system and assist others to get into those positions or take those positions yourself. And again, we do need someone to help organize your state. We have 50 states. I have decided to tour my state, and I've toured my state numerous times before. Gerard and I, we traveled all over the state. And so we have a lot of contacts, a lot of people, and we're going to go back out again and make sure we get committees of safety built in every county here in New York. I don't know if Gerard's going to be able to make it with me right now, but we'll see how things go with his back. But we do have another person working with me in New York, a guy named Dave, and he's up in the northwest corner of New York State. And he's a very active individual, was building committee men, not only in his own county, but in counties around him. And he agreed to work that part of the state. And I'm going to work from the south up. He's going to work from the northwest down. And we'll meet in the middle somewhere. But we will get our state organized. We're looking for people that are interested in organizing their state. We're putting together, and we'll put together more things, but we're putting together, you know, PowerPoints, and you can take, we'll do it in two ways. So, you know, introduce the people when you go have your meeting. It'll probably be like a 40-minute or a 35-minute PowerPoint, and it'll be in video, so you can just kind of click it on the PowerPoint, click it on, go, and, it, you know, we'll do the whole thing, and it'll be done in 40 minutes, so it's a video. Obviously with audio, but we'll also offer the same one without the audio if people want to speak it out themselves. But you get it done, the introduction done in 30-35 minutes or so, and if it's a two-hour meeting, you now have an hour and 20 minutes or whatever for Q&A and getting people involved to, you know, commit to building committees of safety, and then you assist them as much as you can, and you send them. You get them connected with the Committee of Safety, a Committee of Correspondence contact we have up here in the National Liberty Alliance. We'll put that information will be found on our directory. If you look at your browsers here, you can click on our directory right there, and it'll give you all of the leadership that we have. Now, I don't think we have put up there our, we do have someone who's working with us for quite some time and helping to educate people, and they're probably going to take that position, and they can use help in this position too. So as a committee of correspondence for National Liberty Alliance to work with the committees of correspondence in all 3,134 counties, assisting them for knowledge, information, education, you know, whatever we can do to stimulate the growth of our grassroots to take back our nation by having government by consent. Okay, next question.
On. Yeah, that's all the questions. Robert is on the line tonight. He did a talk last Saturday to the taxpayers of Michigan. He'd like to tell a little bit about that if he could.
No, right ahead, Robert. Robert, by the way, we should connect this week sometime if possible. Kind of get our ducks in order and what we're doing, how we're doing, and I'd like to get a meeting up with Sheriff Dar and you know, see how much he wants to get involved. We do need a sheriff that'll be involved very closely, or at least a deputy of a sheriff who'll be involved very closely with what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance and be that contact information to work with the sheriffs across this nation. But so let's see what we can do on that, okay, Robert?
Are you unmuted, Robert?
He's not unmuted yet. Get into the queue, Robert. We can find you quicker there, maybe. See if he's down low. No? I don't see him. You sure he's in the room tonight?
Well, I was just talking to him on Skype here a second ago.
Ah, I'm here.
Yep. Oh, there he goes. How you doing, Robert?
I'll get up with you tomorrow. It's all right. It'll early afternoon.
Yeah, I should be around. I'm trying to reorganize my garage, but it's right outside my office here anyway. So I'll hear, I'm sure, the call. But you know what? You got my cell number, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you don't get me on the computer, get me on the cell, and then I'll go to my computer and we'll take the conversation on the Skype. Okay.
Okay. Fine. That's fine. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, I had a meeting last Saturday with the United States Taxpayer Association of Michigan, and
also with the Constitutional Party. We parted with this. I was invited in. It was a two-hour monthly meeting of the central states involved in the taxpayer and the Constitutional Party. And we parted with a handshake. I invited them to come on in to National Liberty Alliance anytime. Come in and join if they want. There would be asking them for a vow as far as how they treat our material. I also made the same agreement with them that I, as a member of National Liberty Alliance, would respect their thoughts on their information. So we are kind of in step with each other. They like a lot of our things, and I am especially interested in, they have a pretty good committee men set up. They have a pretty good electoral college, electors set up. It's very interesting, and they have the correct amount of what you need in each county in the United States as far as into the electoral college and elector process, which is very interesting. I find this very interesting. I think it's going to be more important as we go down this path in history that we are going through. And I do believe that there's going to be, we will go back to the Republic. I have no doubt about that. We will go back as a single unit to the Republic, in which you can have 2, 3, 4, 5 different people vying for president, vice president through the college. But I do believe that as patriots, the more friends and the more we can get involved in this thing, the quicker and the better off we're going to be. So in my eyes, it was very interesting and very profitable as far as getting closer as patriots to know each other. And I think it's a step in the right direction. I think there's other things that are going to come out of this. And I don't think it's going to be too long before a lot of different things start to happen. So I just wanted to mention it to you, John, and let you know what I'm snooping around with, kind of, you might say. So
yeah,
it's very interesting.
It. All right. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome, John.
Okay, did we find Brent yet? Is Brent here?
He was here earlier, yeah.
Brent, you got the control to unmute yourself? Maybe someone can look for Brent.
No, I got it.
Oh, there you go. Okay, we're going to move over to you very shortly, maybe 5 or 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
There was someone I had a conversation with earlier, and I wanted to take that up front right now. And maybe have a little bit of more of a conversation with this person, and then I'm going to pass things over to Gerard, and I'll introduce you first, and we'll just take it from there. But give me 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm going to unmute. I don't see them anymore. Let me see. I don't see them in the Q&A. You dropped out of the Q&A. Back. You got to get back into the Q&A for me to unmute you. Star 6 and a 1 to get into the Q&A. Okay, there you go. All right. All right, you've been unmuted. What's your first name? You see, you got R-A-G-N-A.
This is Kirkland. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. You're Kurt from what state?
Kirkland from, I travel the states. I'm in Arkansas, HQ office, Bill of Rights office.
Okay. All right, we were having a good conversation before things started tonight, so... We can't spend too much time with you right now, but maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
That's okay. Heavenly Father will allocate the time in the future. But I just want to have a couple things.
We can get back into the queue and we can talk more too. You know, or Gerard will be here to talk.
I just want to let you guys know that the Bill of Rights offices across the United States is willing to assist any way they can to help you guys. And there's just one thing that crossed my mind under your guys' conversation was you mentioned the sheriffs. And I was wondering if the National Alliance has implemented a plan to actually deputize people and actually start making arrests.
Well, no, we're going to leave that to the sheriffs. We're working with sheriffs on that, and it'll be up to the sheriffs to make the arrest and do those things. And they'll be working with us, of course, as we go. We're looking to approach every sheriff in America, and we're going to be giving them the Constitution and, you know, our book, which is about the Constitution and the law. And if they're not interested in, supporting and defending and upholding the Constitution, then we will encourage the people within their county to get rid of this guy. So, the sheriff's got to do that. We don't want to appoint sheriffs or any kind of person for any kind of an office. We want to go through the process that has already been there. Look at, you know, everything we need. Our Constitution is there. All three founding documents are still there. Our structure, our government structure is still there. Both on the federal and the state levels. The only problem is we've got a lot of criminals in office, and we got to get rid of them. We got to have people who are statesmen, who's going to obey the law, and recognize what their authorities and jurisdictions are that they've been given by their state and of course federal constitutions.
Our offices have actually learned how to turn them against each other, so they all turn against each other by planting evidence, playing a little game with them, and that's what we seem to be getting by with, and just basically planting the evidence so that later on they can actually be, arrested or sued, you know.
Right. So. Well, again, we're going to use the sheriffs for that part of the process of arresting them, and the people themselves, that's why we're building committees of safety. They got to do the indicting, and before we indict anyone, unless they're really a hardcore criminal and they know about it, but a lot of people are just ignorant, and we got to give them that opportunity to make a change. You know, we got to give them the olive branch. So we want to give them that opportunity, notify them of their breaching of their agreement as being elected, or their oath, shall I say, and if they don't respond properly, then it's time to consider an indictment on these people to pull them out of office. We don't have time at all to wait to build the committee man process and start to doing the recall. And by the way, we do have on our webpage, so let me see if I can get back to this other page here. We do have a recall petition right here on our website, and we'll give some instruction on that, too. We haven't written instructions on that. That'll be in the committee man handbook on how that process works.
Not to interrupt you, my brother, do you guys have any kind of paperwork on insurrection complaints or breach of constitutional breach to assist people with?
I'm sorry, say that question again?
Do you have paperwork for an insurrection complaint or a breach of contract complaint for constitutional breach to file against these people?
Yeah, no, we haven't put anything like that together yet, but, we'll look into, a process, and again, that's going to be working through the people in the counties. We're busy, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is what National Liberty Alliance ultimately is. We always call out to let people know that we're going to be doing an indictment consideration. And we give them the place and time, and we give them all the information necessary for the consideration of that indictment. And then they come together, and we make that vote and decision on whether we want to indict or not. So we'll continue to do that. We've indicted, I think, a couple of hundred judges, or quite a few. I know we've indicted about 200 people, and I think they're all judges, a lot of federal judges, and of course, other judges.
Okay, brother.
Hold on. I'm going to get the whole thing out here. Again, we're pushing for the organizing within the states, and we need to assist those people. When the people in the states start to come together and organize, then we can assist those people in contacting everyone within their state for a meeting for a consideration on an indictment. So we could do it that way, or they can come together. They've got enough people within their county, within the Committee of Safety, they can come together and consider an indictment. you know, you got a meeting of 26 people, 25 people, and you people want to do an indictment, you could do an indictment. But we don't want, because you're just pulling people together to do it. And so we need to talk about that. We can't go haphazardly with this. You know, if there's a jerk knee reaction on these things, we have to do it properly, and we have to give people opportunity to repent and turn from their ways, unless it's really that bad that there is no opportunity for that. We need to indict. But generally speaking, most people, we need to give them the opportunity to fix their wrong ways and start obeying the Constitution and doing the right thing. And after that opportunity is given and they refuse and deny and don't do the right thing, that's when you come together and consider an indictment. So the Committees of Safety can do those things pretty quickly as they're putting together the administrators for the grand jury within their counties. And as soon as that's going, and also, you know, we can pull people in from other places. But again, you know, that's how we can operate that, and that's how we can make this thing go quickly. So we can take on the committeeman job without being elected committeemen. After all, that's what they're doing anyway, the enemy. And we can also take on the power and the authority of the grand jury within ourselves by calling together 25 or more people and saying, let's do something about this problem. But you do have to first give the opportunity of repentance and people to turn around and start doing the right thing. But, go ahead.
Okay, for the record, to share with the National Alliance, to let you guys know from our office, we do have universal documents that I've created, short and sweet, so we can assist you on if you'd like to look at those and
sure, if you want to
see some of our documents.
Yeah, send the information to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And
I have all your contact. I have your contact information that, you guys send me, get a hold of me a lot of times for calls and stuff. But I've always been busy traveling. And but anyways, the point
right,
is,
you,
is
but
I just want
when you send it. But when you send it to mail, something like this should go to that particular mail, because when you send it to mail at National Liberty Alliance, all of our leadership gets that mail. And I
okay.
will get that mail.
I think some of your leadership, some of your leadership might already have some of the universal documents, maybe. But I just want to stress to you, since you're the leader, is to stress to you what we've been doing on our offices with our team members. We actually we take the shortcut, the short route is what I call it. We utilize the Constitution as a weapon, and we flip it around, and we basically trick them just like they trick us, and bring to their attention of their criminal charges and get them to stop the worrying about what they're actually charging you, and then they focus on what their actions are, what they're doing wrong. So I guess it's shifting the burden, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, all that information you have, you know, get it to us that particular email address, and I'll keep my eye open for it, so I'll look at it too. But
okay.
And the
other thing that I want
to
if I can, I would like to let you know. Some key points and important things that you should know that could assist you guys too, that from experience and actually being on the front lines. Number one, you already know this probably, how important witnesses is. Witnesses are so important. So if you're on a phone hearing for somebody for traffic infraction or whatever, if you go in as a witness and when they question you, you can actually just have two witnesses during a court proceeding process over Zoom or a court hearing, and just have the client on a special appearance just question the jurisdiction, and a lot of times they don't usually can't move forward. They'll just scramble for another date, and then you go through some process with them on that part, but a lot of times it shuts them down. So we can show you how to get rid of a judge, we can show you how to get rid of an attorney, and we can show you how they can turn on each other. And a lot of times this works. A lot of times you get a dismissal usually quick and fast, or if they're really so bad and corrupt, of course, you know you're going to have to exhaust it all the way through the court process in the lower inferior courts, and until you get to the appellate court, till you get to the point, to the threshold questions, to get into the federal court to actually get anything done. So,
well, yeah, and we don't deal too much with really fighting in the courts anymore because they're so corrupt. But if people are stuck in the courts, then they have to fight, and we can assist them. And I'll look at your information and your procedures that you put together, the forms, and then maybe we'll talk in the near future about that. Maybe we'll have a meeting in a week or so concerning those things. But, get me as much information as you can to that website, mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay. Can I give you my telephone number, personal number, private line at HQ?
Well, you can send that to me on my email address. Send it to mail. It'll be safe going there, even though other eyes will see it. They're all leadership, and they will brainstorm some of these ideas and look at your papers and give me their thoughts and everything else. So just put your phone number in there, too, and I'll get it, and we'll connect maybe in a week or so, and after I have time to review some of this stuff and discuss it with you.
Okay, well, I guess I'll stand down from the floor because I can keep on going, and there's a few points I want to touch with you guys so bad that I think is very important, but I'll go ahead and hold my tongue and maybe just share that in other calls whenever you give me a chance to.
And maybe we can, like I said, have a call in a week or so, personal, and maybe you can discuss some of those.
Okay, can I just leave one important thing for closer for on our end that's really important that I
sure.
believe that you should know as a leader?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Article 6, paragraph 2. That is the key. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Love you guys.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Okay, before we move on, let me see here. Hang on a second. By the way, Gerard, you have a hissing coming over your computer. I don't know what it is. It's like sounds like water running or something. I don't know.
I usually try to keep muted when I'm not on, but I didn't mute.
You might want to keep muted as much as you can. So I'm going to pass things over to you. We're going to introduce Brent. I see Brent is still here. He's in the active speaker area, so he's unmuted. So let me introduce Brent. Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent's got the mic. And I got passing everything over to you, Gerard. You got the controls, okay?
Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Did you get that? You got the mic. You got the controls.
Calling yeah, I muted line. Myself, but I did. Okay.
Okay. Fine.
Everything's
so,
fine. Yeah. Go ahead.
You? Go ahead, Brent.
All right. Thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and I'm as always coming to you and at you from the hinterlands of the Wabash River Valley, and the heart of the Wabash River Valley is Terre Haute. The Wabash River runs into the Ohio at Vincennes, or Evansville, and just above Evansville, Indiana, is Vincennes, and then drive another hour or so and you get Terre Haute. But Terre Haute's an important place. Terre Haute's where Larry Bird played college ball. Terre Haute's where they invented the first Coca-Cola bottle, that one that is now so famous on 3rd Street. Eugene Debs, the only man to run for United States president from a federal prison, is from Terre Haute. A lot of other things there that are fascinating. But one of the things that's fascinating there is Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company. Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company is at Terre Haute. And the owner, for years, of Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company was Tony Holman. Before that, his father owned it. Before that, his granddad owned it. His granddad's the one that started Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company. And Tony Holman owned about one-third of downtown Terre Haute. It wasn't that big, but he owned about a half. He owned one-third, though, of downtown Indianapolis, Indiana. And not only that, he owned the Indianapolis 500. He was the one that used to say, "Gentlemen, start your engines." That was Tony Holman. And then when he decided to leave this vale of tears, his wife took over that job, but didn't have the same, it just wasn't the same anymore. But Tony Holman, right downtown, where Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company is, just about, it's on Wabash above 7th, Wabash Avenue coming from the river, and every Monday, I believe it was, or maybe it was a Wednesday, I don't remember, but I used to go to the farmer's market down there. A lot of farmers around there, a few Amishmen, they'd bring their stuff in. Terre Haute wasn't that big a town, still isn't, but they had a nice farmer's market, and it was outside in a big parking lot across the road from Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company. Well, when the weather was inclement, the farmer's market, Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company, would allow the farmer's market to move into the building there. They had a lot of room in that building. They'd been there for decades, and they were, of course, ultra wealthy. Well, I'd set up in there sometimes. I'd go down there and buy milk. And then when I was in there, I'd walk around. They had history on the walls, and they've got the old original electric power plant there, a great big flywheel about tall as me, or taller actually. But I noticed something I had never noticed before inside of Clabber Girl Bacon Power Company headquarters there in Terre Haute. I was hanging around and looking at all the things for sale at the farmer's market when it was raining outside. And I noticed a little plaque on the wall. It had looked like a letter inside of it. A letter handwritten. And I got to looking at it closer, and I could see it was handwritten, and it was from Tony Holman's grandfather, the man that founded Clabber Girl Bacon Powder Company. It was signed by him, and I read it. And he was an immigrant. He was an immigrant from Germany. And the letter was from him, from Tony Holman's granddad, old Grandpa Holman, from him to his brother back in Germany. It was really something to read. He said, "You must come to America as soon as possible. We, here in America, can say anything we want to say." We here in America can say anything we want to say. Well, of course, that tells me that over in Germany, he couldn't say anything he wanted to say. And he was flabbergasted, dumbfounded, that he could say what he wanted to say. Do you realize the freedom of being able to say whatever you want to say? Now, not the freedom to say things just for the sake of shock value. You know, when I was coming up, a free speech movement got started on the campus of a University of California, Berkeley. University of California in Berkeley. We called it Berserkly. I used to live there later. Later I lived there. We called it Berserkly, and we'd go over to Berserkly and go to a restaurant and watch all the weird people. It was berserk by that time, but it all started, the berserkness started from the abuse of free speech. A fellow by the name of Max Stirner, a professor at Harvard, traveled from the East Coast, to the left coast, that wasn't so left at that time, matter of fact, and he made a speech. He was a professor at Harvard. He made a speech at University of California, Berkeley. And he said, why is it we think we need universities? We don't need universities. We need multiversities. University means, unis means one. Just one point of view. Well, he's right about that. The first university founded, the Pope of Rome founded it in a place in Italy called Bologna. That's why we still say Bologna is Bologna, because of what came out of there, the first university in the world back in the 11th century, commissioned. The Pope of Rome commissioned it for the sole purpose of promoting the Roman law, the law of Babylon, the code of Justinian, the canon law of the Church of Rome. He said it was the highest form of reason. He said it was the Logos. The Logos, what John called Jesus Christ. That's what he said it was. This code of the emperor compiled at the behest of the Emperor Justinian. He said it is perfected reason. Well, Max Stirner, of course, took that idea. He wasn't Christian. He wasn't Romanist. I believe he was Jewish. And he told the students at Berkeley, we don't need universities where we have everything that's unified around one central law. Well, that's what the university was, and it started in Bologna, Italy, covered Europe, and now covers the world, universities. And they're all scholastic. They all have the same fundamental purpose, to promote the evil empire. Well, why Christian schools wanted to, they did this back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Well, we're no longer a college, we're a university. Silly, just downright silly. Well, Stirner said this, and he said, we need multiversities. We need to have it where we don't find ourselves confined to one point of view, and we can say anything we want and do anything we want. He even went so far as to say things like, later, the students should be able to copulate like dogs on the quad of the campus. Do you realize that not long after Max Stirner left there, people were trying to do that? They went plumb ballistic at Berkeley. They said before Stirner got back to Harvard, back to Boston, people in Berkeley were trying to do all those crazy things. And it got worse from there, and as you know, then the student movement, that's the beginning, really, of the student movement of the 60s that became a promotion of evil. But it is beautiful that we have the freedom, as a matter of law in America, to say what we believe to be the truth. And that didn't arise from the Constitution of the United States. No, the Constitution, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, arose from our common law. It was just an attempt to restate our common law. You know, in Parliament, they used to scream at the king for centuries, our rights of freedom of speech within this chamber cannot be challenged by the executive. Well, that's the rule now with our Constitution. That's a common law rule. Before Magna Carta, freedom of speech, it isn't enjoyed in the rest of the world. It isn't enjoyed even in the countries of Europe. It isn't enjoyed, certainly not in the common law countries or the communist countries. The communist countries are all under the Code of Justinian or some form of it. Yeah, freedom of speech. Well, I got to thinking about that, and I'd noticed, because I like to look into things such as this. Well, let me make sure I've mentioned everything important about that. Well, I wanted to go to Acts chapter 4, and I've been involved in cases, freedom of speech cases. One particular, I remember it was Ladue School District versus the Good News Good Sports Club. Ladue is a wealthy, wealthy community, north central, a wealthy Jewish community on the north central side of St. Louis, kind of the north and the west. Ladue. It's a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri. And there was a woman there that wanted to have meetings after school with some of the children that were on the sports team at junior high. And she called the club. She wanted to start a club because her son was there, called the Good News Good Sports Club. And they'd meet after school in one of the classrooms. And she would teach the children. They were not tiny children, but she would teach them lessons from the Bible. Well, the school board didn't like that. Matter of fact, they ordered her out. Said, get out of here with that. It's against the law. Kind of like that congressman did. That congressman it was a congressman, Nader, something in New York. He said, there is no religious test in this chamber. And so help me God, with the oath, that's what he was objecting against. Well, that's what happened here. And so this mother, she was distraught over that they had rejected her that way. She thought she was doing nice things, teaching the Bible to young people. And somehow a lawyer I knew got a hold of the case. He happened to be a law professor, and I became the gopher on the case. I wasn't the upfront man, but I was many years ago, and I was a guy that was doing the legwork and trying to figure out what the law was and providing information. And the Good News Good Sports Club lost at the trial court. Judge went against him. He was compromised in the sense that I don't know whether he knew the difference between men and women. I mean, if you can't figure that out, why would we expect them to be able to figure anything else out? And eventually appealed it to the Eighth Circuit, and the Good News Good Sports Club won. And the reason they won was because it was a matter of free speech. And what that school was trying to do was they didn't like the people talking about the gospel, especially Jesus Christ. And what really ticked them off there was that she was doing that. And they said, you can't do it. And what they were doing was, and here's the rule, as a matter of what folk call constitutional First Amendment law, it's against the law. It's against the law of our Constitution. It's against the law of God, for crying out loud, to limit or discriminate against a person because of the content of his speech. It's unlawful to discriminate against a person because of the content of his speech. Now, I want to hasten to add, though, that means the government can't discriminate against you for the content of your speech. Now, anybody else can. I can tell you to get out of my house, but I don't want to hear your noise, whatever I think it is and I don't like. Or at the workplace, if they don't want you talking about certain things, they can kick you out. I had a lady call me the other day. That's not the government, see, doing it. I had a lady call me the other day, or was... Yeah, I was on the telephone. Oh, yeah, she was on an airplane going to a, she's a rabble-rouser, very dangerous woman, to the evil empire, that is. She got on an airplane. She had to get on the airplane, so she had to put on a mask, so she did, and she's sitting in the back, and she's sitting next to a fella, and they're waiting for the flight to get going, and he's got a mask on, and she's got a mask on, and she said, boy, I get tired of wearing these things. And he said, I do, too. But they didn't take their mask off. Well, the steward came by and overheard part of the conversation and leaned over and said, I would advise you, this is his words, according to her, I believe her, I would advise you to get a lawyer. And then he walked away, walked up front, knocked on the cabin or on the captain's door, went in where they were doing their pre-flight. They were there a while, the door opened, and all of a sudden here comes security from the airport. And they said she had to leave the airplane, and she said, what for? I have my mask on. You're causing dissension. We want you off. She said she walked out, stopped at the front of the plane where she could talk to the pilots. They were sitting in front. She said, why are you doing this or allowing this? I was wearing my mask. And the pilot said, get the H-E-double-L off of my plane. And they took her off. And she said, that's not lawful, is it? And I said, yes, it is, in this sense. And this is another distinction that should be talked about. I don't like it right now, but it's true. I don't want to fly for that reason. But when you're on an airplane, it's just like being on a ship. You're under admiralty law. And the airlines compete for business, and they try to make it as pleasant as possible, and they don't talk about such things. But the captain of that airplane is supreme on that airplane. Just like a captain, the old man, the skipper of a ship, is supreme. There is no jury. There is no right against unlawful searches and seizures of your things. No, no, that's martial law there. That's admiralty law. It rightfully applies on ships at sea and airplanes in the air. Well, back to free speech. So Mr. Holman, he said it was great to be in America. He told his brother, you got to come here right away. We can say anything we want. Well, so I got to looking and thinking, this is what I like to do, and I'm tired of what people call law. There's so much trash out there. We need to get back to fundamentals, and we need to do it real quick. I've been doing that a lot the last few decades. Let me read something to you from The Laws of Nature's God. as Blackstone says, lex scripta, the law written. Fascinating narrative from a consummate historian by the name of Luke. Luke the physician, old Dr. Luke. And in chapter 4 of this, by the way, Luke wrote more of the New Testament than any other man. Two books, but they're long books. Facts of history. These are historic books. There's no opinions ventured in them, no theology, no philosophy. Well, in chapter 4, Peter the Apostle, is talking. Verse 12, when he's talking about Jesus Christ, which he knew him real well, he said, neither there is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. Now when they, that is the Pharisees, these are the leaders of Judaism, Babylonian Judaism, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, isn't that something? They perceived that they were just bumpkins, unlearned, unwashed, and ignorant. They marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been, that these men, Peter and John, had been with Jesus Christ. And beholding the man which was healed, that was standing among them, they healed this fellow. They could say nothing against it. It was too obvious. And when they had commanded them to go aside out of the council, they conferred among themselves. And they said, what are we going to do with these men? For indeed, a notable miracle had been done by them. It is manifest in all them that dwell in Jerusalem. And we cannot deny it. But that it spread no further among the people, let us straightly threaten them that they speak, and they speak henceforth to no man in this authority. And they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, or to teach in the name of Jesus Christ, that it means in the authority of him. But Peter and John answered and said unto them, now they're in court here, they're in front of the government, this is the ruling bunch, and they said unto them, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge you, or judge ye, plural, for we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. So when they had further threatened them, they let them go, finding nothing how they might punish them, because of what? The people. For all men glorified God for that which was done. Remember, the people in the Bible, cover to cover, lid to lid, as always, the militia. And that's what they feared. By the way, Moses in the Old Testament feared the militia of the 12 several tribes of Israel and told God. He said, you don't get it, God. You're wanting me to do this, that, and the other. There are over 600 armed men in the camp. Well, that's why we have the militia clauses of our Constitution. The government is supposed to be afraid of us. We are not supposed to be in fear of them. Well, back here it says, in the beginning of what I read to you, of this record of what happened, it says that they were unlearned and all that, but it says that they spoke with boldness. Verse 13, now when the Pharisees saw the boldness of Peter and John. Now that word translated boldness is the word that means freedom of speech. They spoke, as the French would say, they spoke frankly. That means openly, unhesitatingly, freely. It means freedom of speech. And if you, and I've done this, if you substitute, that word appears 29 times in the Bible, in the New Testament, the Greek word. And if you substitute the word freedom of speech instead of boldness, another confidence, other words are used, it flows beautifully. And that's what it means in every case, freedom of speech. 29 times, and it always means the same thing in every case, freedom of speech is fundamental, utterly fundamental to who we are as a people. If you can't relax and talk, you know, up in Canada, I had a friend in Canada. I was on the radio. I used to have a radio show there in Terre Haute. It was on two FM stations and two AM stations simultaneously. Drive time, it was beautiful in the morning. But the fellow, the old fellow that ran those stations, he was old. He's old now. He's up in his 90s. His wife has since passed away. He started in radio in Vincennes, Indiana when he was 14 years old. Oh, Vincennes. That's where Red Skelton is from, Vincennes. He was down there on the radio station back before anybody knew who he was, I suppose. But he, his wife was from Canada. They'd moved to Terre Haute. Her father was a coal miner, and there are a lot of coal mines around there. And he was from Newfoundland. He had moved down there. Well, they went up to visit his, he told me they went up to visit his in-laws. This hadn't been that many years ago. And they were sitting around the table talking one evening, and I don't know what he said. He said something about the Bible or something about sodomy. I don't remember what it was. And one of the, her family members said to him, "I wouldn't be saying that if I were you." He threatened him. Because in Canada, if you read Romans chapter 1 in public or you publish it in public, it's a criminal act, and they'll take you to jail. That's in Canada. As I speak right now, there's a pastor of a church in Canada in prison. For one reason, he said he was going to hold church on Sunday. That's why he's in prison. And the very judge, some Jezebel kind of a woman, the very judge, I didn't make her Jezebel. You go read her decision. She's the one that jailed him, would not let him out on bail pending his hearing, and this was in the newspaper there, they let out a fellow that was convicted of molesting children on bail, but wouldn't let him out. Of course, he told him, he said, "If you let me out, I'm going to hold church on Sunday." "Well, yeah, you ought to let me out, but it's unlawful for you to jail people for preaching on Sunday." Listen, if there is not boldness of speech, freedom of speech, to have church in America, there won't be freedom of speech anywhere. Do you think the evil empire is so stupid they haven't figured out that out? They figured that out. That's why the whorehouses are open. The casinos are open. The abortion mills are open. And in California and other places, the churches are shut down under pain in California, I know. I've been reading about it, $1,000 every time they have church. They're threatening, just like these fellows did in Acts, these Judaics. They threatened them. They couldn't do anything about it lawfully. They knew that, and they didn't. But they threatened them, tried to intimidate them. That's what's happening in America, and it's happening like it's never happened before. If you can't say what you really believe to be true, and you can't without suffering criminal prosecution, fines, jail, we're on the edge, friends, neighbors, and kin. We're on the precipice. Have we been that stupid? Are we willing to give that up? Here's what I want to encourage you to do, and I'll stop. I want to encourage you to go to church on Sunday. Go to church. Someplace. Say, "Well, I don't agree with organized religion." Well, freedom of speech is too important. I don't agree. I've been to a lot of churches in my life. I don't agree with everything at any church I've ever been to. Ever. And I've been to some really sound congregations where the truth is taught. I encourage you to do that because freedom of speech is at stake in America. I loved getting on here and saying what I believe to be true. I have a responsibility to do that. I'm sworn to do it. And even if you aren't sworn to do it, you're still responsible. Swearing to do it doesn't increase your duty, doesn't give you any new duty. Swearing to do anything doesn't give you, if it's lawful, swearing to support and defend the Constitution of the United States does not give anybody a new duty. It only strengthens a duty they as Americans already had. You're born on the land. The land is your land. The land that the Lord your God has bequeathed to you. With that comes the responsibility and the duty not to pollute the land. We've been given land. Are we going to pollute it and allow this evil scum to overcome us? No, keep saying what you believe to be true. But more than that, even, not more than that, as much as that, support those who are saying what they believe to be true. If there's a preacher out there who's bold enough to say, we're having church and I'm not going to wear a mask and I don't encourage anybody else to, patronize that church. It's fundamental to who we are. Remember what de Tocqueville said? De Tocqueville, he was the Frenchman, remember, that the French government sent to Pennsylvania, primarily, to observe a new invention that the Quakers had given to America called the penitentiary. That's why he came here. He took it back to France and they put it in place. That's more of the evil empire. But he did say this. He did say that the thing he noticed about America, and he wrote back, he was fascinated. He was young enough not to be bitter. And he was fascinated at what he saw. He said the strength of America is in the churches and the pulpits of America. He said, I didn't know such things like this existed anywhere in the world. Men in America, more than any people, anywhere in the history of Adam's race, take the Bible, we take it individually, and we decide what it means. We decide. We don't trust a priesthood to tell us. That's one of the greatest strengths of our country and always been. And we've got preachers that set the example. If you know of one that's trying to do that, even though you think he may be wrong or he's struggling, support him. Help him out. Encourage him. This is Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And my comments are my own, as usual. They're not the comments, or not necessarily, may not be the position at any point of the leadership of NLA or anybody therein. But they're always kind enough, have been kind enough to let me say a few words, and that means it's time now to go back to Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brent. That was good. I have a follow-up here. Hang on just a minute. Let me my screen's cleared out.
Good grief, Gerard. I talked for 30 minutes.
That's good.
Well, I'm only trying to crank it down. I didn't watch my clock, but I appreciate you being patient.
Not a problem. And we still got a little time to burn. I have the website to this fellow, the retired sheriff that gives courses, and he has a 7-page PDF with a script that you're to follow when you get pulled over. And basically what it does is, well, he does two things. I haven't looked at this in years, but I did look at it years ago. And he has the officers incriminate themselves, just like that other fellow said that was on here. Get them to think about the things that they're doing wrong. And he also has something that when you get to court, that he says, well, every time, if you stick to the script, the prosecutor is going to fall in the trap. And then he'll be in a horn dilemma, and they'll dismiss the ticket. But I don't, you know, it's been a long time since I read this, but this 7-page document is pretty neat. And his name is Eddie Craig. You can go on YouTube and just put in Eddie Craig, and you get a bunch of stuff. He has his own website, the Tao of Law, Tao. Tao of Law. He transmits off the Logos Radio Network. But if you go in and you put in Tao of Law, you'll get the PDF of his summary of his course. And he tells you, this action should be practice and memorize, and he goes through it. It's very self-explanatory. So he has a traffic stop practice script PDF, and I got to that by Googling Tao of Law Eddie Craig. And just look him up. He's got a lot of stuff. He's got a lot of stuff on YouTube. He's pretty good. He goes into the vehicle and traffic law and explains it and makes sure you understand and the whole right to travel thing. And And then he talks about things like custody and functional equivalent of a custodial arrest, and just what the stages are when you get pulled over, and how you get crossed into deeper and deeper. If you don't know what you're doing, they can suck you in. And you know, and he tells you things like, don't let them search the car and blah blah, and don't open all the windows up. But you could read it yourself. I think it's one of the best ones I've seen in as far as instructing you what to do, and then, you know, building the case so that when you go to court, you beat the ticket. Anyway, so that's what that is. Eddie Craig is his name, EddieCraig. And if you Google him or put him in YouTube, there's lots of information. You can find all kinds of stuff. Okay, let me get back on my web control here. Man, the mosquitoes are out. I can't believe it. I just got bit. Okay. We got Dwayne from Arizona is first in the till. Let me unmute you, Dwayne. Go ahead. You've been unmuted. Can you hear
me? This is. Can you hear me? This is Kirkland. Yeah. I already said my pitch earlier.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. So, I must have didn't get out of the queue.
No, he left you in there. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay. E. Green. I don't know from where, what state you're in, but you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So my question is, let me turn it down. I'm dealing with some legal tyranny at the moment. And I would need some assistance, or if I could talk to somebody with an affidavit. I kind of have my affidavit. I have my bonds. And I just want to make sure I'm placing everything correctly.
Well, you have a specific question on an affidavit. You know, we have an affidavit form online that you can download and put your information in, right? On the National Liberty Alliance site.
All right, I guess I could start there. Is there any way to contact anybody by email, just in case, over the week?
Well, I don't know specifically and for what. And you know, we don't do specific cases. I mean, we could send you to the place where you can look at the information. You know, I mean, if it's something that we're gonna do for you, like they violated your unalienable rights, you'd get a hold of Jim. He does the intakes on those, but you don't necessarily need Jim, and you can use our information to fill paperwork out to do affidavits and things like that.
You know, okay, yeah. That's good. So my main question is as far as ordering, putting everything into order with the affidavit. I don't want to get caught in a trap because something's not in proper order. Is that necessarily a thing?
Nah, you look at, first of all, you always can correct things, and when you're in a court of law and you're not an attorney, they're supposed to give you special consideration. Judges don't like you coming in without an attorney, because then it's the judge's job to protect you, and he doesn't want that responsibility, you see.
Right.
He's got to make sure the lawyers don't abuse you, because you're not a scholar of the law. But that doesn't mean you can't sit there and do your and state your own case. So he has to walk that fine line and make sure they don't abuse you, and they're always going to abuse you. You know, Scalia said the biggest thing that they do to the people is they violate their due process. So if you're standing there in front of a prosecutor, they're going to violate your due process numerous times. So if you don't have a lawyer and he's violating your due process, does that make the judge liable in a certain sense? I guess you could make that claim, you know, that he let them violate your due process. I don't know what the recourse is, but I know they don't like it. They'd rather have a lawyer there, because once there's a lawyer there, it absolves him from having to protect you. And anything that happens to you, well, you had representation, so, you know, you're on your own. But
right.
Are you a paid NLA member? Do you pay the $5 a month?
Yes, I do. I just made a donation 2 days ago.
Well, the reason I ask that is just because some areas of the site won't open up to you, and some of the stuff that you need, I think you need to be a paid member to get. You know, like some of our, you know, looking at our cases and the way we set things up and the language, you know, action at law and all that stuff, and there is some traffic stuff in there and affidavits and things like that, would be very good for you if you want to do that, you know.
I do, and I'm working on it. I live in New York, but I'm stuck in Ohio right now because I'm stuck in some legal tyranny, victimless crime, or just something that it's not under common law. I'm trying to free myself.
So they're holding you there, what, for trial? You're not in jail, right? You're just under what?
Yeah.
Huh?
Hey, I was in jail in Sandusky, Ohio for 18 days. I got out, and I just said, forget it. I need to learn this information. So I ordered a bunch of books, and I have a master's degree in criminal justice. So I've been looking at the information, writing my notes, and going forward as such.
Well, let me ask you, are these just traffic charges, or are they more than that? I mean, are they felonies?
This particular case is a traffic charge from 2018. I have, long story short, I had the case being suppressed, but then they locked me up because I got in some other trouble down in Cincinnati, Ohio, which there is no witness or victim, so I'll handle that next. But I'm just caught up right now, and I know that I can get myself out of it. I just want to go about it properly by starting a correspondence over the mail. Now I'm on house arrest. They got me on house arrest at my mother's house in Ohio, but I'm a New York resident.
So you're not allowed to leave the what? I
can't leave the house unless I'm going to work, and I can't leave the state of Ohio until I go to court May 12th.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're gonna wanna put paperwork in, maybe before May 12th into the court.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
That's what I was thinking. Yep.
Yeah. So you want to submit a paper, you know, before that time, and we have some. I don't know what the specific charges are, but basically it's all the same baloney. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
You know, most of the time, John likes to try to challenge their jurisdiction. You know, which they always end up not really having it. So you could look at some of the paperwork we have. On challenging jurisdiction, you know, how to set it up. And, you know, I don't know how serious the charges are that you have, but usually...
They're not crazy.
No, but usually if the prosecutor sees that you're putting paperwork in, see, they don't want to work. They want the fine. They want the easy way. If they think you're going to fight, and that's what you got to do, you go, no, I want a jury trial. And they will not want to do that. They will fight you. And if you just hold out, a lot of times you hold off long enough, they'll dismiss the case to get rid of it, you know.
Right.
So you got to play that game. You know, I don't know how long you know they can keep you under house arrest for something like this. I didn't even know if they could do that. Usually they release you either in your own recognizance. Because you're a New York State resident, they don't want to let you go, huh?
Pretty much, and they're doing whatever they want to do with me. And the prosecutor didn't want to let me go, but... Look at her now, so I'm figuring out how to free myself. But I do have another question, well, another worry. Let's say I do start filing paperwork, and they just get pissed at me, and then they try to come and arrest me or something.
Well, that can happen. They get vindictive. There's not too much you can do about it, except throw more paperwork at them, you know? So, I don't know. You know, sometimes with cases like traffic and that, you're almost better off with a good traffic lawyer because, look, they do stuff for their buddies. And a good lawyer, he knows the judge, he knows everybody. So, you know, sometimes you can end it quicker. I hate to tell people to go to lawyers, but, you know, if it's going to mess up your life and you're stuck in another state and you got to get back to New York State, you got to figure out the quickest, easiest way to get it done. You know, you probably don't want anything on your record, so you got to stick to that. They're going to give you ridiculous things. You just stick to your gun. And usually they'll break down just to clear the docket after a while. You know, don't do any plea bargaining unless they're going to wipe it to a parking on the pavement or something ridiculous like that. You know what I mean?
I've already done that. I've already done a little stupid plea bargain because they locked me up for no reason. You know?
Right.
And I do have an attorney. I paid him $5,000 already, and he's definitely buddy-buddy with the judge and the prosecutor. So, dang, I'm just trying to get from under this thumb without causing too many more problems for myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would submit paper and you look at you're gonna have to make yourself kind of a burr under their saddle, you know what I mean?
You said you would not?
What's that?
You said you would not file paperwork, you said?
No, I would. I would file paperwork. Look, you can always back off of that. You know, I mean, it depends on how bad they want you and how vindictive they are. You don't have any personal knowledge of these folks, the prosecutor, the cop, or anything like that, or any prior stuff that they would have a vendetta against you, do you?
No. No, I don't, actually. I mean, I'm not sure. I know I don't.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think if you persevere with the paperwork of that, you become more than you're worth to them. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And then you can always delay. You can always delay it. And then, you know, you say, well, I'm seeking assistance of counsel. That's worth 45 days. You know, and then you come back in and you say, where's your lawyer? And, well, I talked to a lawyer and I made this paper out. That was my assistance of counsel. They won't be happy about it. But, you know.
Right. So since I have court May 12th, my bonds should be in the mail either this week or next week, and I was going to FedEx them out to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my plan going forward.
Right.
Okay.
So I don't know, you know, specifically. I mean, you may want to go on that. You may actually want to go on that website I just gave Eddie Craig and look at some of what he says. And he's got a lot of ammunition, and a lot of it is constitutional. And it, I just find that if you stick up to fundamental principles, it's easier for me to defend myself using those maxims, you know, of them violating your fundamental rights. I would go on there and read some of the stuff. I haven't been on there in years, but I did it a while ago, and back when we had some traffic stops and we were helping another fella out of at court, we did pretty good with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just try it, let me know, see, you know, but you know, an affidavit is important. Nobody files affidavits today, so when you put an affidavit in, that kind of throws them off a little bit. It's a sworn statement. They got to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, like the last gentleman said, the court should be scared of us, not vice versa.
Yeah, well, unfortunately. Anyway, if that's it, just I'm going to go to the next guy, but let us know how you make out. Yeah, let us know how you make out, all right?
Will do. Thank you.
Okay, have a good night. Okay, next victim, Barbara from New York. How you doing?
Hi, this is Barbara from New York. I just wanted to comment that someone was speaking earlier about the real ID and that they were concerned that they couldn't enter a federal building. And when, like a year and a half ago, I had to renew my driver's license, and I didn't like what I had heard about the real ID. It seemed to have all these overtones of increased surveillance. So they said, you know, it's so great when you renew your driver's license, you can get a real ID. And I said, I don't want that real ID. So I said, can I survive without it? And they said, absolutely. All you have to do is that whenever you enter a federal building, you have to have your passport with you.
Right.
Your driver's license and your passport.
Right.
And you'll be fine, and there's no difference. So that's what I did. Hopefully that's okay. Hopefully they...
No, that's good. Right. Yeah, it's like, it's ridiculous, you know, so... You know, the funny thing that gets me is, you know, they tell you got to have a passport and a driver's license and whatever they want, you know, you're going to give it to them. Fact of the matter is, if you were a real terrorist, you'd have all that paperwork in order, wouldn't you? Yeah, you have forgeries. You know, they act like they act like nobody can get this paperwork, or because you have that, you know, it's like makes you okay. You know, if I was if I was a criminal, I'd be pulling pictures off and sticking my picture on and doing fake IDs, and that's what they do. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
So it's all a bunch of baloney to begin with, anyway. You know.
Yeah, it's like the TSA. They check the innocent people endlessly. Okay, that's all. I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Have a good night.
You too.
Yeah. Okay. Philip is next. I got an email. What state are you in from, Philip? Do you hear me? You're unmuted, Philip. Says you're at 766 at yahoo.com. Philip, going once. I don't hear anything. It's like dead air. All right, I'm going to try the next person. I don't hear anything on your end. I don't know if you don't know how to unmute yourself or not. I'm going to open up Edward from New Jersey. Philip, look at the thing. I think you got to dial star 1 to unmute yourself. All right, I hear something now. Is that you? Something must be wrong with your mic. I just hear like a scratching noise. Yeah, I'm just getting static from your end.
Yeah, he's on a computer, Jar.
Yeah, I don't hear him, though. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and do the next person here, which is Edward from Bergen, New Jersey. Go ahead, Edward. Hello, Edward, you are unmuted. We're going to get through this list fast this way. Edward from New Jersey, what's your question? Maybe I put him to sleep. I don't hear anything. I hear a little something, but I don't know if it's him. Maybe he walked away from his mic. Hello, Edward. Well, just get back in the queue if we're still on when you realize it. I don't know. I'll go to the next person. That's Philip again. I think it's Philip.
He's there now, and he's unmuted. Say something.
Philip, talk. Go ahead.
We're not hearing you, Philip.
I hear static, but I don't hear him.
Is your mic? Can you get your mic closer to your mouth? But we're not hearing a word.
No. He's got some kind of problem with his mic.
Put your volume up. Yeah, can we put him back down there? Work your mic problem, Philip. We can't hear a thing.
All right, I'm going to try William from Sacramento. You've been unmuted.
Hey, you hear me?
Yeah, I do.
All right, so I really don't have so much of a question as I do. A lot of information. It seems like people really know a lot about what's going on. Is nobody changing their status, not becoming a secured party creditor or filing for 1779s or anything like that?
No, we kind of looked at that and didn't really decide to do that. That's the UCC-1. And
well, that's the question. Secured party creditor status. Yeah, you don't have to go that route. No, you can go one pager route, just 1779, and that's a status change. A couple of people that notarize it, and then you send it to somebody that is within the organization that is the handler for that stuff.
Yeah, I don't, Yeah, I don't know. I put a paper in years ago and declared myself, you know, sovereign and all that stuff. And I got a reputation because of it. Just not much else, you know. And
sovereign. That's the thing. You don't want to list yourself a sovereign because
no,
yeah.
I didn't say I was sovereign, but I said I rescind any contracts that I didn't sign. You know what I mean? I didn't say I was a. I was careful not to say I was because the next thing you know, I'm a sovereign citizen. You know, you got to be right. careful with the language that you use. But, you know, look, that's all part of the straw man thing. That's all part of the illegal corporation, which should be going away here very shortly because that corporation really is defunct now. It has no authority whatsoever.
It's true. It went bankrupt again.
That's right. And if you know that and you go to court and you say, look, you have no jurisdiction over me. Your corporation went bankrupt. Any judge that's worth his salt is going to know that you know what they know. And I think at this point here, you're going to, between now and April or whatever it becomes apparent that we're going back into constitutional law, these judges are all going to have to change their tune. They're not going to be able to pull any of that bullcrap anymore. And when you call them out on it, you won't have to be a secured party creditor. There will be no such thing anymore. You should be getting all your money.
That part doesn't matter so much, but the status change does, because it's not going to happen anytime real soon. They've been illegally in office for a long time. They have not been Article 6 oaths of office from the president.
And guess what? We could throw them all out in a day. Once it becomes apparent and they start following the law. See, right now, all these years, like you said, they've been a long time because there was no consequences. That's not going to be the case anymore. When we go back under the rule of law, there will be immediate consequences. And I'm telling you right now, those people are going to be kicked out of office in 24 hours. There's going to be, this is what we're worried about at NLA, because there's going to be a big vacuum. And who's going to go in those positions? Hopefully people like us will go in them. You know?
Well, to the Constitution, you're not... No bar member is supposed to be a member in the government whatsoever.
Well, you could start there if you want. You know what I mean?
There's no court of records. You know what I mean?
If you, according to the standards you're talking about, which I agree with, you're gonna lose all the Congress, the Senate, most of the local yokels are outside of the law and what they're doing. Many of them don't have oaths of office, you know, or they have other such problems. So you can walk in and you can basically remove them from office if you want. And I believe when I ran for office, a local office here, and they were taught, they give you a book called the Town Law Book with all the laws for the town. And it's, you know, it's not extensive, but it was, specifically for elected officials, but they had a blurb in there on oath of office, and I wish I still had that book. They said that somebody can come in and pull you out of office and take your office, step into your office, just by filing this paperwork. So that's pretty interesting.
I don't know any kind of paperwork like that, unless it's because they don't have a proper oath of office. But even
exactly, that's what it said. With no proper oath of office, you can go in there and you could declare that they're null and void, and you can actually set yourself in their office.
Right.
I didn't know about that.
Of course, that's the problem.
What's that?
You don't have anybody that's willing to go in there and enforce it. I mean, I'm part of an organization that they filed a lot of things in with the World Court, and you know, against Hillary Clinton and all of those clowns. And they're still walking the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, well, the World Court doesn't really have any jurisdiction at that time that they were using it. It's just a you know, it's an idea. It doesn't have any teeth. That's the problem. I mean, some people are using the Hague now, and. And some of the Nuremberg stuff is going to come into and going to be pertinent with the vaccines and stuff, you know, because they're forcing an experimental vaccine, and that is written in under the Nuremberg Code that governments yep. can't do that, because and that came from, you know, during the war with Germany. So
yep.
so the, you know, and the, so those courts are going to have, you know, you got maybe some of this stuff will have more teeth as this all unfolds, because people are going to wake up and they're going to understand. And yes, you will have sheriffs that will enforce this as they wake up. We're educating sheriffs every day. We got a whole slew of them that we're working on, and we're hoping that we can get them to come along and get some common law courts and common law grand juries to start this process, because there is no lawful courts right now.
No, there's very few. There's only 3 courts of record in the whole United States, so it'd be kind of hard to pull off any of that stuff. But the guy that was on there that was in Ohio locked down at his house, I got some information for him that he could get rid of those cases pretty quickly. One thing is just about the wording and the filing of the documents. There's not going to be an affidavit in there in his paperwork. So just the fact that there's not going to be an officer that's placed an affidavit in there, that's grounds for dismissal right there.
Right. But they never file affidavits. They don't want to swear to anything.
No, exactly. But because they don't, you know, nobody says anything about that. And you get an attorney which is getting paid by the same company that those guys are getting paid from. So he's definitely not going to be on your side. But you walk in there as a attorney in fact, and that's what you claim. You know, I mean, you're an attorney in fact, and you could bring somebody in there that's not an attorney, that's your, you know, attorney in fact, and is helping you with the law. You know what I mean? But I'd like to get some information, give some information to this guy. So if he's still listening, give him my email or something.
I don't know if he's still listening. I don't see him in the queue. But give your email. Is that you at outlook.com?
Yeah, Dean Pfeiffer.
Dean Pfeiffer at outlook.com.
Yes, sir.
D-E-A-N.
F-I-F-E-R.
F. Pfeiffer. F-I-F-E-R at outlook.com. Okay,
yes,
so,
okay,
so send him an email.
Send him an email.
And he'll give you the information.
Send him an email.
Okay, very good.
Very good.
I just found you guys, so I'm looking around with a lot of different organizations and trying to, you know, get things in place. So I think we're going to have to unite with some other organizations to make things happen, you know?
Yeah, and we're doing that now because, you know, everybody's out there reinventing the wheel. We got to be a force of one.
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of people don't know that there's 3 constitutions in play right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's you know, they're not going by any of them. They've pretty much suspended the Constitution. So, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, like the foreclosures, you know, there's a few things you could file on that and get that dismissed right away. And
well,
we've put that stuff in play. I've done a couple of them myself with in court cases. And, you know, they just, I've had the judge just walk right off the bench. He didn't want to hear none of it.
Right. Well, you should get together with Jim Bearson. He's the guy that does the intake on the foreclosures and stuff, and kind of discuss what you got there, and we'll see what you have, and if we can work with it.
Yeah, well, I put in my profile, you know, a bunch of things that I'm, you know, that I've been doing. So see what happens.
So you're from Sacramento?
Yes, sir.
Okay, God bless you.
That's right, I know. I'm originally from Chicago, but I've been in California for about 20 years or so. So
okay,
good. It ain't good.
Yeah, well, look at it is what it is.
I had to go to court, but I didn't. I was in and outside the courtroom. I had a mask on, they arrested me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that wasn't real good.
No.
But, all right, well, I'll let you get at it with these
okay,
guys.
Okay, thanks.
Have questions, but anybody that has questions or whatever, feel free to email me if I can help you out.
Okay, thanks, William.
All right, man.
Yep. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Yep. We got E. Green. You've been unmuted.
Yes, thanks. I was just trying to confirm the email that Dean just gave out.
It It's Dean Pfeiffer at Outlook.com. Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer. Sweet. I was just making sure I got the right one.
Okay. Very good.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Next victim, Indigo Bosco. Hey, Indigo Bosco. I don't know. You're unmuted. Go ahead. Which state are you from? 513, is that Ohio?
You've answered all my questions already. Sorry, I double backed it.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
And Eli, you are...
Hey, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Is it good? I had some questions about the filing the petition for the committeeman papers.
Uh-huh.
You guys know when the dates are to run those papers?
Well, they vary from state to state. What state are you in? You got to look up your state election law. Hawaii, I have no idea. I don't know that we have that listed. We've asked everybody from different states to send us information, but I don't know that we have Hawaii. You should be able to go to the Board of Elections and get that information. I mean, that's public information. I mean, we
Board of Elections, if I called a person there, I would say, hey, I want to run the Democrat designated petition and the Republican designated petition. I don't think they'll even know what that is. But you think they will, or how do I figure that out?
Well, they have to. What do you mean they have to know? Because they're taking them. That's where they get filed. In other words, whether the county chair, a lot of times the county chairman of the party puts that stuff in, and they're not used to seeing the candidates. But nevertheless, the Board of Elections still gets them. And then, you know, once you got the right amount of signatures, then you got to be put on the ballot, you know. So they should know what that information is. They should know what the paperwork is, and they should know the walking and the filing dates. And it varies from state to state, and sometimes it even varies, you know, in the counties even. So
have you had anybody else call in or collect information from other states? Are people running into problems as far as finding when to walk in and how to get the list of Republicans or Democrats?
Yeah, they like to give you trouble getting that stuff, but they're supposed to give it to you. When you walk in there, you're supposed to, that's public information. I mean, you in my county here, you can get it. They're used to us asking for it. So they'll give it to you, you know.
Walking in, how about calling in?
Well, you could call in. Of course, it's easier for them to play games with you over the phone because you're on the phone. You know, right. It's easy for them to say something or lie to you and hang up or whatever. But if you want to call first, and if they're very friendly over the phone, say, hey, come down, we'll have it ready for you, and it's, you know, and just pick it up. You could also say that you're doing research for a college project or something like that, and you would like this information, or you know what I mean, to make it less confrontational for them. You know, I'm doing a civics course for government in school, and this is my research, and I want to see the designating petitions, and I want a list of all, you know, the, you know, all the Republicans and all the Democrats, you know, whatever. They should just give it to you, you know. Of course, if they get an inkling that people are going to walk papers and go around the administration, you know, then they get nasty. You know, those places that are highly contested or whatever, they're going to give you trouble because they can, you know.
Right. So that's where I'm trying to think, like, I think they will. I mean, I'm just making that assumption, but would I be able to email them and that would give me a paper trail that they indeed, like, rejected me or trying to beat around the bush? Because if I, in the end, like, if they won't give it to me, I got to have some way to prove that I tried to test.
You know, you could email them, but I don't know that they're going to answer you.
Right.
That's the other thing, you know what I mean? What I would do is I would call them on the phone and I would tape the conversation. because as long as I believe you could tape any conversation that you are a party to without permission, you know, you need to check Hawaii's laws. But, you know, or just walk in and put your cell phone on. You know, the cell phones usually have a video camera on them, and just start taping and ask them for that information. And I'll tell you what, if they don't give it to you, you could do a Freedom of Information Act request. And there's no reason. What are they going to come up with as a reason that they can't give you that information? See what I mean? I mean, there's no reason that they shouldn't come right. You shouldn't have to file a Freedom of Information Act to get the list of Democrats or Republicans in a county. You know?
Okay. And then where would I submit? Should I ask them beforehand? Like, do you know already? Is it the same in every state? What office or who you submit the petition to when you're done running it?
You submit it to the office. The party. Usually, you're only going to find a Democratic or Republican Party office in a county. They have an office, each one of them, in the county. You're going to submit it to the like if you're running for Republican, you're going to submit it to the Board of Elections, Republican Board of Elections in that county, in that office. They should be able to take those and the designating petition, huh?
The Republican Party office or the Hawaii State Board of Elections office?
No, it has to be the Republican Party office. I don't know if either you
is not really closely affiliated with the state, right? They're kind of like their own.
Well, look at the parties are private associations. Anytime you get into trouble with them and the judge goes, oh, I can't tell them what to do. They're a private association. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're supposed to be able to take that. And look at if you sent in a designating petition to the state board of election, I would think that they have an obligation to get that to the right place. But you know they're going to look. You're going to get lost in the sauce if you're running for a, let's say, a Republican position in a certain county. I would go right to that party, their office, their Board of Election office, and present it there. And then I would get a receipt for it. I would get them to stamp it. I would get a copy that I submitted it, you know, so they can't deny it.
I know in Hawaii town, I've been there before, the Republican Party office. Go in there. There's a lady at the front desk. But I think you know, it's not a really big building. You don't have like a the Board of Election office inside of the Republican Party. So I guess we just submit it like to whoever the county chairman. Or
yeah, whoever is sitting in that office should be able to take designating petitions. That's your right to walk papers and submit them. And you can ask them where am I supposed to drop off this designating petition?
Okay. Right,
they got to tell you. And put your cell phone in your pocket and tape it in case they want to give you, you know, wrong information. But I don't think that they will.
Okay. And then does it make sense for me to run the petition if I do not have 3 to 5 people? I know that the website recommends you know, 2 Democrats and 2 Republicans. What if I only have...
Oh, no. On the designating petition... You have to go by your state election law. Like if it said you got to get like around here, you got to get 5% of the signatures in a district. Like
right,
if you're running
right.
for
to form a committee of safety, I would need 2 Democrats, 2 Republicans.
Oh, committee of safety. Yeah, right. You could. They're not going. Nobody's going to bother you about that. You know what I mean? They don't even know what that is. If that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. So the Republican designating petition is going to allow me to be a committee man or form a committee of safety if I get 5 or 6.
Well, wait a minute. A committee man and a committee of safety are 2 different things. They're not gonna know what a committee of safety is. They know what a committee man is, and they like to appoint them, but they're deemed elected by virtue of nobody. If you run a petition and you submit it and nobody walked papers in that same precinct, then you're deemed elected on election day without being on the ballot, so to speak. You know what I mean? But a committee of safety is different. I know that the committees of safety ended up morphing into the parties, but a committee of safety, it really has nothing to, you know, you can have Democrats, Republicans, you know, you're coming together to fix problems and to you know, be that force that's pushing back. You know, and you have a committee of correspondence in there, you know, you got to read our committee of safety stuff. You know, yeah. All our forefathers were in a committee of safety before they, you know, did anything.
Yeah, I read this stuff about the committee of safety. And I'm trying to do the next
step. But if you go into the, election office and you tell them that you're going to start a committee of safety, I mean, what are you trying to be a committee man also?
To form a committee of safety, all this designated petition, what I'm sort of doing at NLA is. Thinking the main thing is we form our committee of safety, right?
Yeah, but you don't have to walk papers to form a committee of safety. You get together with four or five people in a county, and you have a meeting, and you set up the articles. As we got it all explained out, but it's got nothing to do with permission from the county or filing anything with the county that I know of.
Oh, man,
you know?
Okay, I'm thinking that. I gotta walk those papers.
No, to walk. When they say walk the papers, that's to become a committee man. And the committee man is the one who will interview the candidates and walk the candidates' papers when they decide to run.
Okay.
See, the committee man picks the candidates, and they also walk the candidates' paper because, like, let's say somebody wants to be governor. Usually they need like 35,000 signatures, let's say. They need a percentage from the last vote. So who does that? The committee men do that, you know?
Yeah, committee men, well, the parties.
Right, right. Well, it's through the party, but the committee man basically is a guy going around getting the signatures for the candidate. And the committee man technically should be interviewing the candidate. That's what they don't let you do today. That's the problem. You know, you should be wah-dang the candidate, questioning him on the Constitution and everything else before you ever carry his papers. You know what I mean?
Yes.
See, today they just, the party chairman says, here, we need these papers carried. Blah, blah. You know, they picked them. They picked them from the top down. Meanwhile, it's supposed to come from the committee man up. You know,
yeah.
You're
our committee man, our Republican Party, is like one of the top guys, the way ours is structured.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they pick their person that they want to run, and then we all do the grunt work.
That's right. And what they've done is they've taken a system that was supposed to be from the bottom up, you know, that came out of the biblical Mosaic system, you know, where you had tens of families, hundreds of families, and what they've done is they turn it top down. Now they got the party chairman is like the king, and he picks all the candidates, and then you little committee men go, like you said, do the grunt work, walk the papers. You might not even know what the guy stands for or anything else, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so then as far as the committee of safety, from what I read on there, you know, we can do all kind of disaster preparedness and interview the candidates and all that. But if we're not running a paper, we're not recognized by the state, how would we enforce anything that we're doing?
Well, the process of the committee of safety is getting together and talking these things, then getting with your sheriff, and it all falls under posse comitatus, basically.
Right.
You know,
sheriff, so
yeah, that's another problem. I don't know what to tell you there. As far as, you know, how you're going to organize what you're looking at the committee, you have a right to assemble and you have a right to petition. And they always get nervous when you got a group of people assembling. So you say they're not going to pay attention to you, but I think as these things become more popular, they will pay attention. And so there's things that you can do in a committee of safety, but, you know, only to a certain extent as far as organizing and educating the public. And that's why it's nice to become a committee man also, because now you have a position that basically you're supposed to be interviewing the candidates, you know what I mean? And picking the candidates and voting on who you want to run for that office. The committeemen should all get together, and they should do a vote after they award a candidate, you know, or two or three candidates, to see who they want to run for that position. That hasn't happened. When we did it here, because we had so many people, and it was a Tea Party movement, but basically it was a committee of safety, and we acted like we were the committeemen. I mean, we did walk papers, and we did become committeemen, some of us, but even so, a lot of us did not. But we were a group that met with a two-county group, and the guy running for Congress, we had people coming in front of us, because when we had our meeting, you know, in these small towns, you get 100 people in a room, that's a lot of votes. Votes, people lose offices by 30, 40 votes in these little towns. So if you get an organization and you're all coming together, they acted like we were the committeemen. They came and we wadded them and we talked to them, and we just did what the committeemen does. And they basically, those politicians gave us their presence and answered our questions, because they understood that we were a mouthpiece and that we could make them or break them with that many votes, you know what I mean? Because as it, you know, it gets moving, before you know it, you got a couple hundred people, you know, then before you know it, you got 300-400 people. And in these small places, that adds up quickly, and they'll listen, and they're going to start listening, you know, because basically you're a voting block, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And then, who has, you know, I heard John talk a lot of times about the 90-day period to be able to remove somebody from office. Is that the committeeman at the party level, or is that the committee of safety?
No, I think that's the committeeman at the party level that he's talking about. I don't know. You're talking about running petitions for removing people?
I don't know that he says petition specifically, but he sends out. We should be able to get to the place where we have the power to interview the individual and sort of hold them to what they said they were going to do. And if they don't do it, we should be able to remove them.
Yeah, well, that's you're not going to do that right away, because they're not acknowledging them. I mean, that's in a perfect world. After we're all established and that's all set out, they'll laugh at you today. There's some states that do have recall. Well, every state technically has recall. They try to deny it, but that's another unalienable right. You should be able to get people together and file petitions and recall somebody that's doing bad, you know. I mean, the other thing is today it's just as easy to indict them for breaking the law, because that's what they do. You know what I mean? It's almost easier to indict them and have them vacate their office for bad behavior. But who is it? Governor Newsom? They got like 3 million signatures to get rid of him.
He's laughing at him.
So he's got a problem, doesn't he?
Yeah, and, well, he's looking at the paperwork so far. He don't care about the signatures.
Well, I don't know. I haven't kept up with it. I thought they had more than enough to do a recall hearing. I don't know what the process is, but I know they have, if you collect so many signatures, that they, at that point it kicks in that they can impeach him, so to speak.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see something come out of that. I know that was a lot of work for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're after midnight now. I'm ready to go. And I don't know. You know, I'll try to find out more on between the Committee of Safety and the committeeman. You know, for Hawaii with no sheriff. You know, how to get yourself some teeth there. But the main thing is, you know, if you're meeting as a group and you call these candidates in to interview them, just start acting like the committeemen. Tell them we got a group of people, and we're a committee of safety or whatever, or even a group of concerned citizens, and we want to know what your views are. We're going to have 50 people here this night, and we want to ask you some questions. There's not anybody running for office that should refuse to do that.
Yeah, we have that going already. We have several groups.
Yeah, so basically you are doing it, and you do have teeth, because you have teeth in the power of a group. you know what I mean, of assembly.
We're telling, like, if you answer these questions right, then we'll clear that our group endorses.
Right, we'll support you. I mean, we had one guy, he answered the questions not so good. He was a West Point graduate. We said, you know, you don't know this stuff good enough. And we told him, you should read this book, and that book. And he went away. And then when he came back, it was maybe a three-month time period. He came back and we re-interviewed him. I'll tell you what, he knew everything, every question we gave him. He really studied. It was very impressive. So we made a difference. And we did support him, and he did win for congressman.
Okay, good, good.
You know, but that's the process working.
Okay, right on. Well, thanks. I guess I better let you go to bed, huh?
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, right. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and God bless, and keep your powder dry, and we live in an exciting time. Get ready for, like Trump says, the best is yet to come. Have a good night, everybody.